Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, Tuesday night edition of The Horn is on the air. I'm Bob, and I've got some good news, or encouraging news, I should say. Let's start this thing out by noting that after last night, we are $750 toward keeping this whole this whole little experiment in the First Amendment running, which is absolutely magnificent, absolutely marvelous. So that's a very, very good sign that we will make it to the $1,100 we absolutely must have by October the 21st, and hopefully also to the regular goal, because I figured under the circumstances I've got to include the regular contributions. I've got to include that in what we have to do. So I want to thank everybody who stepped up. I want to thank Sue for her challenge last night, for other folks to step in and buy the prints, the gorgeous handmade prints made by our friend Diane. For love of West Virginia, I'm looking at mine right now, and soon many of you will be looking at yours. I thought you might like to hear a little bit of the commentary, and I've been asked twice in two separate emails by the folks who wrote. I've been asked not to give names out, so I will, of course, honor that. Let me see if I've got to pull them up again. Won't take but a second, I hope. Probably should have had them pulled up beforehand, but there's a lot of stuff that gets done along the way. One question was put by a person who wants their who ordered two prints. Two prints, and wanted to know, is it okay to order two? Yes, it is okay to order two. And he said he didn't want to hoard them, but no, if you want one for yourself and you want to give one away or something like that, it is more than okay to do so until they're gone. There are some left, not a whole bunch, but some. It was said, if you address this issue on air, please don't mention my name. Not that I'm trying to be anonymous, I just don't like to make a big deal about contributing because I know there are so many who can't contribute, but contribute in so many other ways. What a beautiful sentiment. Indeed, and thank you. And then there's this. You can read this on air if you want, but please don't mention my name. I heard you mention on Friday's show that you guys were in some deep stuff in terms of making the bills. I want to let you know that you've got $200 on the way. I don't know how much of an impact my contribution will make. Here, let me help. Huge. Hopefully, since your announcement, more people will have contributed to this wonderful network and that you guys will have been near your goal of paying off the bills. I've also kicked some dough to Ben Birch in hopes he can keep the archives and streams going. God knows, without him, where else am I going to go to get my daily podcast of kick-ass conversation radio to listen to on the way to work? And this is and this is just a beautiful thing that our anonymous letter writer says. You guys are one of the few radio networks that I attempt to tune into on a regular basis. With the likes of Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and all the other garbage polluting the airwaves, the horn is like a big breath of fresh air. I, for one, am glad you guys aren't on terrestrial radio. If you were, the FCC would probably censor you like crazy. God knows, you've been through it. And I remember you mentioning what kind of BS you've had to put up with while you were on terrestrial radio. Suffice to say, I'll be damned if the horn goes dark for good. I hope you guys make your fourth anniversary and that you guys can celebrate many more. Thanks, and give my thanks to the hard-working Horn family. I read that kind of stuff and chills go up my spine. Because that's exactly what's going on. That's why we do what we do. And with that in mind, look, let's just start this. There's a lot of news to do, but let's just remember why there has to be liberal, progressive-oriented news and conversation. And there is no better explanation for why there has to be such than to remind you what kind of filth, passes for professional broadcasting. And, of course, you know who the current poster child is for filth in broadcasting. Let's go to the radio, gang. Let's go to the professional terrestrial broadcast medium where trained professionals sit behind microphones and entertain and inform the American public via the airwaves that the American public owns.
Hang on just a second. Hang on. Let's all just weep with Nancy Pelosi for a second.
Okay.
Let it go. Just let it go.
Rhetoric.
Just let it go. It's all going to be fine.
Rhetoric. San Francisco mean.
I know.
Kookery.
It's all going to.
Demagogue.
We'll round them up
hateful
soon.
Hateful free markets.
Put them in freezers. And eat them when.
Nasty.
We have to turn to capitalism.
Halliburton. Halliburton.
Because of global warming.
Carl
Rove. Okay, we got it out of our system.
Did we get it out of our system? I don't know. Thanks to Media Matters for that clip of the man that Keith Olbermann has taken to referring to as Lonesome Rhodes. You got to watch that movie. It's a piece of genius. Just go to imdb.com and look up the filmography of Andy Griffith, and you'll find what I'm talking about. It's an Elia Kazan film, I believe, and I can't come up with the title right off the top of my head, but somebody will via email just any minute now, I'm sure. But a man who gets caught putting substances under his eyes to make him weep mocks the fears of people who recognize the damage that he's done. And here's the bonus round. He gets to be a multimillionaire in the process. I feel safe in saying that there is. I don't know of anybody doing liberal talk with one possible exception who's out there just itching to be a multimillionaire. But we do have a real passionate conviction that something approaching facts and something approaching reality and something approaching honesty needs to happen in the broadcast medium. And here's a hint. the right-wing echo chamber ain't it. You know, and I love the line. What was it James Carville said the other day? These clowns can't deliver a pizza, let alone a steak, to the Republican Party. I think it was Carville. And it's so very telling. I think that's an adequate reminder of why the horn exists, and why liberal talk exists, and why Ben Burch felt the burning need. Jesus, 7 years ago. To start the White Rose Society. 7 years. Astonishing, isn't it? So thanks to all who have contributed to make sure that there is a fourth birthday for the horn. I wish the contributions were going for a big party that we would just invite everybody to. But that one, we may have to put that one off for the fifth birthday party. But that's okay. If we make it, and I'm confident that we will, if we make it to birthday number 5, well, shoot, we're already the oldest liberal network in the country. Amazing, isn't it? Who knows what can happen on birthday number 5? But it's not just Glenn Beck blathering about Nancy Pelosi and mocking her. We'll have to go to cannibalism because of global warming. And crying fake tears. It's also the institutional sexism, demagoguery, and condescension of the old guard of the Republican Party. And I'm saying that with that accent for a reason, because that's where the Republican Party lives anymore. Now listen to me, son. I'm talking to you. A press release was issued today by the National Republican Congressional Committee. The National Republican Congressional Committee. Lambasting Speaker Pelosi, and why does there always have to be a caveat? Because I'm a liberal. Because I can't stand, I don't carry water. I tender praise when praise is due, and because we are honest with first with ourselves and then with the rest of our reality. We tender praise when praise is due, and we tender criticism when criticism is due, and there are no sacred cows, and nothing is off limits. But Nancy Pelosi recently stated that she's not sure that the Democrats in the House are going to get behind ramping up the war in Afghanistan. And God Almighty, I hope they don't. I don't know why it is that all our ramps are followed by the word up. Do we not have any ramping down? You know, here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, ramps are something that are the first sign of spring. They're pungent little leafy heads poking through the frozen earth and sending traditionalists in these Appalachian hollers and hills into paroxysms of delight as they recognize that spring is on the way. It'll soon be time to get the plants in the ground and rampant bean dinners just dot the land because they're yummy. It's my understanding ramp, R-A-M-P, it comes from the old English or old Gaelic or old something or another, things that involve ye and oldie, O-L-D-E. Ramseh, which I think is like oldie Englishy Gaelicy for garlic. But anyway, we call them ramps around here, and they're pungent and they're tasty and they're wonderful, and there's nothing like them. And oddly enough, you can't grow them on a mountaintop removal site after the mountain has been removed. But yeah, who the hell am I? Anyway, she simply said that she's not sure that the Democratic House will go along with the recommended sweet Jesus ramp up in troops that General McChrystal is wanting for his war in Afghanistan. And what does the... I said they dredged up some nasty old sexism. What did the National Repig-Lickin Congressional Committee say? Well, the National Repig-Lickin Congressional Committee is calling on General Stanley McChrystal to, and this is a quote, put her in her place. Now, to a rational person, that means, you know, folks like us, as opposed to Repig-Lickins who believe in things like gossipy water moccasins and an earth that is only slightly younger than the recipe for the written recipe for bread. That means that she needs to get a striped A-line shirt waist dress on and damned well get into the kitchen, because the Beeve and Wally will be home from school soon and they need their damn brownies. They don't need some woman sitting there in the House of Representatives, the House of Representing and so forth. She's a woman. She needs to be put in her place. Now, curiously, Nancy Pelosi did not say that that there ain't going to be no surge in no Afghanistan. She said she is agnostic on the issue, pending learning more, which means that, Congress being Congress and our system, our entirely wholly corrupted system of government being what it is, it means that not enough people have knocked on her door with bags of money stamped with the names of various bomb and bullet and gun and plane and ship and tank building outfits that are designed largely to eradicate more brown people from the planet, because of course we have when it comes to us, you know, there's sort of a brown people surplus. We've got surplus brown people in the world, you know, because we're us. From the National Repig-Lickin Congressional Committee's press release, the following. And I really do feel like this needs to be read in a deep southern accent, because that's all really, you know, with the exception of weirdos in Iowa and strange agents from foreign lands in Idaho and the occasional weird Kansan and the strange-ass Arizonan. If you watched the Ken Burns documentary last week on the part about the Grand Canyon where the Repig-Lickin fought tooth and toenail, hell and high water, to try to be allowed to, he was sent to the Senate for the purposes of advancing himself and his own business interests above those interests of the American people themselves. Did you happen to notice that? Nothing changes. You're just saying. But anyway, from the press release, General Pelosi has no problem sacrificing her own credibility. Notice how they call her General Pelosi. God, the demeaning nature of the Repig-Lickins never ceases to amaze, does it? General Pelosi, ha ha ha, has no problem sacrificing her own credibility as the Obama administration and liberals in Congress attempt to walk back a strategy they strongly advocated just months ago, says NRCC Communications Director Ken Spain. Nancy Pelosi continues to make party politics a higher priority than our national security. Rather than listening to a four-star general's assessments on Afghanistan, General Pelosi somehow believes she is better suited to craft our country's military policy. If Nancy Pelosi's failed economic policies are any indicator of the effect she may have on Afghanistan, taxpayers can only hope McChrystal is able to put her in her place. Now, I don't, there is a long, until recently, a long tradition in the military of having our officer corps be decidedly apolitical and not espousing political views while under the flag and under commission. Weirdos like General Stanley Boykin, notwithstanding. Well, you know, we were involved over there in Somalia, where I was a big hero. We were involved in a holy war, because our God's bigger and meaner and better and more magical than their God, because their God's the devil. It's the devil, I tell you, the devil. But no, there is that long and honorable tradition of apoliticism among the really good officers of the American military. And what you gotta wonder, is how General Stanley McChrystal, regardless of what he wants for or in or about Afghanistan, you gotta wonder at how he feels about being made a political mule for the National Republican Congressional Committee. But this little press release, and if you want to see the thing in its entirety, you can go to nrcc.org, although God knows it being the National Republican Campaign Committee, Congressional Committee, or whatever the hell it is, God only knows what will happen to your computer if you go. Put her in her place. You can go and read it there. But what you have here, and I don't think this is unfair analysis. I don't think this is an unfair conclusion to be reached. What you have here is an overt manifestation of the sexism that continues to reign inside the Republican Party. It's nasty, it is demeaning, and you know what? It's bad for America. I do like the response of Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida. She said, I think the place for a woman is at the top of the House of Representatives. It's evidence that they long for the days when a woman's place was in the kitchen. Yeah, see, Debbie and me, we got that, we understand, and y'all do too, understand. Now a woman is third in line for the presidency, but it's not surprising coming from a party that's 80% male and 100% white. And therein lies the rub. I don't know. I will defer to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner on this to sort of explain this and the dynamics of it. He's much more well schooled in it than I. But I don't know if this is like Oedipal stuff or sexual inadequacy or the just outright misogyny. You know, I said something about Lindsey Graham last night that I've kind of agonized over in the last 24 hours. I said I wasn't sure how they would make Lindsey Graham apologize to Glenn Beck by putting a horse's head in his bed or a live woman. And, of course, that was an overt reference to the fact that the Lindsey Graham is known in Washington, D.C. circles as being the biggest closet case in the Senate. And I felt the need, as I thought about it, I felt the need to try to make it clear that, once again, gay, straight, bi, asexual, it don't matter. It does not matter. It is not a part of my life or yours or anyone else's, except to the extent that we reference our own sexuality in our own day-to-day living. What it is, however, is a matter of hypocrisy. And frankly, as long as we do not call on the heterosexual community to have a closet that they hide in, that we hide in. Shh, don't tell anybody I'm straight. You know, that kind of thing. then it seems wholly hypocritical to insist on closets for the other side of the sexuality spectrum, whether it's don't ask, don't tell, or senators from South Carolina who can't openly deal with the fact that they like guys and not girls. So just a little bit of a caveat there, or perhaps an apology if I offended anyone. It's not about the sexuality. It is, however, about the hypocrisy. But regardless of that, and regardless of any faux pas I have made, the fact remains that the National Repig-Lickin' Congressional Committee wants a general in Afghanistan to put Nancy Pelosi in her place. Just what that place is, beyond barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen making cookies for Wally and the Beeve. Well, like I said, I'll defer on the psychological dynamics of that to folks more suited to make the diagnosis. But I got a feeling that the diagnosis is going to be disturbing any way you slice it. Now, by the way, yesterday, as I mentioned, was the first Monday in October. That meant that the Supreme Court got busy. And I've got one of those stories here that one of the hot button issue cases that's to be decided by the court in this term, that being the Mojave Desert Veterans Memorial, wink, wink, on federal lands. It's a big old cross. And of course the right wing said, well, it's been there for more than 40 years. And I could have saved this for tomorrow night's program, tomorrow night being prayer meeting and everything, but I got a question for you. To what extent or how does a cross, which was an ancient execution device, no more nor less so than the electric chair or the horizontal crucifix that we use for lethal injections, to what extent does that ancient execution device serve as a memorial to dead soldiers? Okay, that's A. Part B is, if it can be deemed to be a memorial to dead soldiers, then how does it, a cross, how does it serve as an honor or a memorial to dead Jewish soldiers or dead Muslim soldiers or dead Wiccan soldiers or dead Hindu soldiers or dead Confucian soldiers or dead Buddhist soldiers or dead atheist soldiers? And the short answer is, it is not only not a memorial to them, it is specifically an affront to their service. Because they did not march off to war to fight for God and a Christian God so America could continue to be a Christian nation. They didn't do it. They marched off to war, regardless of whichever war it was, Jew, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, atheist, they marched off to war in large part because they were poor folks who were compelled by their government via conscription to do so. That they had some patriotic feeling for this country largely does not arise from a religious impulse, I would submit to you.
And if it does, it arises from an individualized religious impulse, which may or may not be Christian. But the right wing is absolutely wetting itself sodden over this case. I don't know if you see the weird little right wing emails or what. But they are. And this thing is a little bit of nothing. It's absolutely nothing. It's an, as far as I can tell looking at the photographs, it's an iron, you know, it's pipe. It's made out of pipe, and frankly, it's ugly in the context of the desert setting in which it is placed. And yet, because in 2009, in the United States of America, in a country that has strayed so far from what the framers intended, we will have probably another case of hard cases make bad law when the Supreme Court decides this case this term. And frankly, I like for nature to be what nature is. And I don't want it... Look, on top of that little desert hilltop, I don't want any crosses. It's not because I'm hostile to Christianity. Because newsflash, I don't want any Stars of David. And I don't want any crescents. And for the Unitarians, I don't want any question marks. That's a joke. I don't want any religious symbolism up there. Because I don't want to religionize and politicize the natural spaces, the few that we have, that are still in existence in this country. And they keep talking about it and calling it a memorial. And the guy who put it up, Riley Bembry, was a medic in the First World War. And he helped to erect the cross in 1934. The news story I'm looking at from CNN says that it sits on a 4,000-foot plateau and was a place of reflection for many vets who retreated to the desert in part to recover from severe lung diseases caused by mustard gas attacks during the Great War. An annual Easter service is held there, but until recently only locals knew about it. The site is not on any maps. And Riley Bembry just put it up, never asked permission, just went into this natural space and said, I'm going to stick a cross up here for my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. The land was transferred to the National Park Service in 1994, 1.6 million acres of desert. Then, with the cross up there, a resident wanted to put up a Buddhist shrine. See? No. No. No tinkling prayer bells. No sand sculpturings, mandalas, or whatever the heck they're called, Edith. Nothing. Nothing. If you insist on believing in some sky creature, let the empty spaces be filled in with one's reverence for one's preferred creator critter. And the right wing is having a hissy. I told you about that stupid email I got not too long back about, they're going to take all the crosses off of all the tombstones of our dead Christian veterans now. All because of this lawsuit seeking to remove this stupid, stupid thing. And yes, I am referring to this as a stupid thing, not because of the iconography of what it means or doesn't mean to Christians of various and sundry different sects, many of whom would gladly kill each other for believing the wrong way, if nobody was looking. But
But because if you believe that this is God's creation, how does it need help? And how does it honor a veteran? Any veteran. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of a decision we get out of this. Wanda and Henry Sandoz, in the meantime, have been taking care of the memorial but now it's had a wooden box put over it to cover up the crossbar. And Wanda Sandoz said, I hope it won't be too long before we can look at the cross again without that stupid box. And her husband said, we'll repaint it. And his wife said, I already bought some white paint. Really? White paint? Really? White paint. It's in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And it is no memorial to veterans. It is a memorial to a particular religious sect. And it just has to come down. And then there's all kinds of places all over the country why you can't swing a piece of roadkill without hitting a church in this country. And you can go in there and just worship your little head off. But you don't, and this is what the right wingers don't seem to understand. They don't get to do it on our nickel. Because that land, at least within the whole Western scheme of things, has value. And to the extent that it has value, it belongs, clearly, to the people of the United States, many of whom aren't Christian, and deserve not to have their money spent in support of a piece of Christian iconography. I don't know why that is so hard for a daggum wingnut to understand, but it is. It just plumb evades me. It's being referred to as the Mojave Cross, and of course, in what passes for journalism, the CNN story I'm looking at. It actually refers to it as a war memorial. A federal judge has ordered the Mojave Cross, a war memorial erected by a veterans group 75 years ago, to be covered. It's boxed in plywood. It is not a war memorial. It's a cross. It is a religious icon. But do not call it a war memorial. If I put up... what? What else can I? What else could we put up that we could call a war memorial? What if it was a giant bullet? That'd be a war memorial. Or maybe a great big statue of a possum for the possum goddess. And we'll call it a war memorial. No, heck no, that's not a piece of religious iconography. That's a war memorial, darn it. Don't you know a war memorial when you see it? You anti-American, pacifist, communist, socialist, don't you know a war memorial? Sure, it's a war memorial. But if it's a war memorial, it's most appropriately a war memorial to Marcus Licinius Crassus's putting down of the Spartacus Rebellion. What was it, 5,000, 10,000 of the rebelling slaves that he crucified, one every 100 yards on the Appian Way all the way from, like, Pompeii to Rome? Now there's a war memorial using some crosses.
was the war in which the cross was most notably used as a, I suppose, a weapon? But no. They just wanted to get home from the Great War so they could run out in the desert and put up a cross. That's why they were fighting. That's why they were standing there in the trenches with the trench foot and their trench coats, fighting back the Hun. I don't think so. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? All right, we will go back to hold, and we will try another line. I hope we don't have phone problems tonight. Hey, welcome to the program. Nope. Oh, this is starting off to Mary Chase. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Yeah, you got me?
Oh, there you are. Reverbo?
Yeah, I, you know, as much as I would appreciate a memorial, you know, to the all the men and women who died for the possum goddess, I can tell you that the people who died for the whale god would take an affront.
You're darn right, and you know what? The followers of the sacred aardvark would be pissed.
Well, and they should be. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm just getting, once again, I sort of had a good day, and then I tuned into my favorite show, and now I've just got a rash. By the way, you mentioned trench foot. I don't, you ever have possum foot? Oh.
Yeah, I know.
That is a slime. I don't even want to go into that. But, yeah, these people, the reason why that they can go in and worship their fool heads off is precisely because we don't have a state religion in this country.
That's what I thought.
Ain't it?
I mean,
isn't that the whole point? You want to go in there and you want to spend all day in there. That's we won't stop you.
We won't make you leave unless the priest does.
There you go. It seems to me that's the whole point of not having one. Now, admittedly, it is, you know, it's easy for these folks to think, well, they do. They think Jesus is all shot to the Constitution. They think, you know, we're a Christian nation. And admittedly, if a man from Mars, well, no, let's check that. If a woman from Mars.
There we go.
Yeah, let me get my bell on that one. Okay.
Oh, he scores.
You know, came down to and had a look-see at our country, you might come away with the idea that the majority of religion here is Christian, and it's probably true. It's not the fastest growing anymore, but still the majority. You know, the fastest growing religion.
But I didn't, wait a minute, Reverbo.
Okay.
I don't necessarily know that our observer from Mars, be he male, female, or she, female, or male, I don't know that they would recognize one monolithic Christianity, because that's a construct of our own. You know, it goes back to that old joke about, are you reformed or are you reformed or free will? Oh, I'm reformed. Me too. You know, and all the way down through the list, and he goes, well, are you this or that? And that. Heretic, die! I don't know that it's possible to recognize, you know, we sort of lump it all, you know, if there's a cross involved, we call it Christianity. But I don't know that that would, I don't know that, that that's necessary, because you know what? There are ostensibly Christian sects that are wholly offended by icons like that on top of 4,000 foot high plateaus in the Mojave Desert, or elsewhere for that matter, to be clear.
Now that's federal land. Is that the deal with that?
It is. It was transferred to the National Park Service in 1994.
Okay.
Shortly after which that Buddhist wanted to erect a shrine, lots of candles and bells and incense and little bells, just like what you got. Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Not
or a Buddha achieves nirvana or something. I don't know.
No, someone wins a Buick with the bell I have. But
ah.
No, the joke around here is you win that Pontiac, and of course they don't make Pontiac anymore.
Don't be trying to win no Saturn either.
No, well, they walk out of this. They walk out of here happy until they try to cash in that prize. I don't know. It seems like most of the, at least where I live, most of the, there is a church on every freaking street corner, and they usually have some sort of Christian mythology symbolism on them somewhere. So, yeah, I don't know. In any way, you're right. You got the Protestants, you got your Catholics, you got your Methodists, all this stuff. But you might think, okay, the mostly that's what we have going on here. But you wouldn't understand that the underlying reason why we do, and that, you know, the one group doesn't shoot the other group, because we have a constitution here.
It makes it a lot easier to get along here. Because, see, I mean, we've got a recent example, for instance, to the extent that it could be said to be one in that region, Saddam Hussein was running the closest thing he could get to a pluralistic society. Now, he would kill anybody who got in his way. That's the way it is with dictators, be they Arab dictators or the Slavic dictators or Asian dictators or Lily White dictators, you know, whatever.
Banana Republic dictators.
Yeah, sure. But the fact of the matter was he had neighborhoods where a Shiite family lived for a generation next door to a Sunni family. And, you know, they got along and, you know, the trash got picked up and then kids played together in the yards. Are there yards? I don't know. But anyway, they got along. We went in, screwed the pooch, upset the apple cart, turned the nation on its ear, got Saddam Hussein out the door. And the first thing they wanted to do, Reverbo, the first thing they wanted to do was start killing each other for their heresies, because even though they'd lived together, next door, friends, people had gotten married, had babies, little grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so forth, they suddenly remembered that their next-door neighbor was a stinking heretic who needed to die. And just in case anybody thinks that there's some sort of an Islamic monopoly on that, you and I both, and we all know better. Because we know of the manifest occasions through history where the Catholics have slain the Protestants and the Protestants have slain the Catholics and the Hindus have slain the Muslims and the Muslims have slain the Buddhists and it, sure.
Yeah, you can't. It's so easy to get those things from a simmer to a boil, to paint.
But the funny thing is, it went to boil almost overnight in Iraq. And it wasn't even simmering. It was just like, boil. And it could. And the only thing that keeps it from being that here is this notion that we're not going to sponsor any religions. So everybody just shut up and worship and be happy that you're worshiping.
I don't know what's happening. I tell you something else, though. I never liked this Christian slant in our armed forces. It's just really a bit much for me. Not only, I mean, it's way crazy in like the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs.
Right, and we have Mikey Weinstein and his Military Religious Freedom Foundation to thank for at least exposing that.
Well, I mean, I don't understand. You want it both ways. You need our help, and you got some shooting to do, and you kind of need our help to do it. See, my theory is, I was listening to you, and here, of course, it's easy for me to go here. I just think that when you're talking about the Great Crusade, which it seems to be what's underneath all of this, I think the reason they do is when they're done shooting all the Unter people, they're going to turn and shoot you and me.
Well, because that's the problem with the definition of Unterfolgen, is that when you run out of the original designees, the scale slides and somebody else pops into that slot.
There you go. I mean, we're on the list. They just got to do some killing before they get to us.
Well, yeah, there's more. There's people that need to die worse than we do.
I mean, that's, you know, I think it's a pretty audacious plan, but that seems to be under the whole plan. I mean, if you believe that life, you know, civilization began over there with all this crap, it's probably going to end that way, too. But that's all I can say.
But it's astonishing to me to think about, Reverbo, that we have a military now that has been so thoroughly religiously radicalized that we've got guys who have M16. Now, Haji, before I blow your brains out, I need to know, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior?
Oh, brother, yeah.
We have that.
We have
a radicalized religious military that has been reduced to a scene from Pulp Fiction. You know the one I'm talking about, Samuel L. Jackson. I'm going to quote now from the book of Ezekiel. That one.
A movie I can never forget.
Who could?
Some very unpleasant parts in that one. That wonderful movie overall. You're not really stretching the truth here all that much.
No, when there is video out there, and it's out there, and it's easy to find, but I'm in the middle of doing a show right now, so I can't go and find it. But when there's video out there that shows a bunch of members of the American military talking about how we need to pass these here Bibles out to the locals so that they can accept Jesus as their personal Lord and Savior, what I just described is not a stretch.
Well, who's going to bother even volunteering in that army? Well, they you know, of course, they'll take skinheads and Nazis can apply tomorrow, and you know, people that normally would have been serving, you know, 5 to 8 for armed robbery in a federal pen, they can apply tomorrow, and they seem to have criteria has sort of changed. I mean, who would even bother? This is just getting to be beyond bizarre. I'll tell you, I'm so pissed off about this whole Middle East thing. Every time a U.S. soldier dies, every time I hear somebody dying or getting hurt in Afghanistan, I mean, I'm just getting angry. Do you know what I'm talking about now? I am getting so pissed. The Russians, those fucking Russians, we're talking about people who they wouldn't even think twice about just leveling your entire town. These are Russians, right, to just get one guy.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Well, they did that.
I mean, they would just level everything to get to one person. And they couldn't make it work over there, and they hightailed it out of there. And, I mean, I just get so pissed. Nobody should be dying over there. I'm sorry. I have my cards. I'm pissed off first about my soldiers. Then I will get pissed off about innocent non-combatants. We are now in the hundreds of thousands with these people, could be in the millions for all I know, who have been wasted. That's the word we have to use. Fucking wasted. Ooh, two F-bombs.
That's two in 60 seconds. I'm counting.
Let me get over here. Very good. Yeah, come on down and get the keys to that new Bonneville. That thing will start. But I mean, I just don't try to get parts. But this is really making me. I mean, we still think we can drop democracy on them from 10,000 feet. What is that line? If our way of life, if the whole world loved what we've had so much, we wouldn't have to sell it, they'd steal it.
Kind of.
I mean,
we're
after. Do you know who makes up? Basically, it's not Al-Qaeda. The Taliban is mostly a bunch of 20-something punks with AK-47. That's who we're going after.
Well, yeah, it's a bunch of people who don't like the fact that they're there where they belong and we're there where we don't.
But it's even beyond that. It's like going after a gang. They're just a gang of toughs. There's nobody over there. The demographics over there are so crazy. There's nobody even in the Taliban over the age of 30. These people don't even have a clue. They just like shooting.
They're hillbillies, by the way. Did I mention the fact that these are the most intensely cranky hillbillies on Earth? And I use the term lovingly, hillbillies, because I are one.
Well, they are hillbillies over there.
But you go up the holler, and you ain't supposed to be up the holler, and you may not, you may very well not come out the holler. And I don't know what Pashtun is for holler, but I'm damn sure there is a word. And it's a place you don't want to go if you ain't been invited to it.
Well, I can't see. I'm trying to think of any place that we've been invited. I mean, yeah, it's just driving me crazy. Let's pull our troops out of there. You want to build schools. You want to help them with earthquakes. You want to use all the good hearts and minds tools that we have at our disposal. Hey, you start using them tonight. You got to get those people, right? I think I sent an email about this once. This is simple. Living, cool. Dying, not cool.
Not dying bad. No, it's like your little note about, it's like your little memo to the wolves last night that I didn't get to.
Oh, that, yeah.
So somebody tell the wolves that they're eating more of their fair share, more than their fair share of food, and they got to die for it. Because Sarah Palin said so.
Yeah. I mean, what you're doing to just live, we want to do for fun. So you'll have to go.
You know, Lottie in the chat room noting, nothing wrong with that. My family's a bunch of Italian hillbillies. And you know what? Hill people are hill people. And we're there because we've been isolated and ignored, and generally nobody comes there unless they want to take something away. So over the course of millennia of human development, we've been made cranky. Highland Scots? Come on. I know that right now as we speak, Susan is sitting out in Oregon going, "Oh, we're a cranky lot."
Oh, they are. Yeah, hill folk everywhere in the world. You'll find them, and they're missing some teeth, and they're kind of pissed off, and they needed a good night.
Do you know? And they didn't call their own land the Inca Empire. We had to wait for Whitey to name it that. They called it Tiwantinsuyu, the land of the four corners. We call them the Inca. They brought us maize. We call it corn. No. But they had this little empire on the western coast of the South American continent, you know, down into the flatlands where, you know, you could have a reasonable shot at a living. And they started marching up into the hills, and they ran into what, Reverbo? Cranky people. We're not up here because we, God almighty.
Well, I think then the Roman legions ran into some of them hill folk on their way up to England and Scotland themselves.
They had to build a wall.
They ran into some seriously wild folks up there in Germany. I mean, they pretty much did the hell.
Well, you go back to the Roman Civil Wars, and the heart and soul of the problems in the Roman Civil Wars happened when the Romans got out of nice, convenient little seven hills of Rome, but you know we're not talking, and went up into the Italian hill country and came back with their heads in their hands. I mean, it's a human behavior phenomenon. And yet here we are, and the Republican National Congressional Campaign Committee, Reverbo, is all bent out of shape because they want Nancy Pelosi to be put in her place and told that we need, by God, it's time to send a few, we need more boxes coming home covered in flags from that hill country and them cranky folks.
Those Christian boxes and those Christian flags. Well, no, actually, of course, they just didn't have you and me do the killing, shooting for them.
Yeah, well, yes.
They're not being very, very polite about in their way they're at treating us, though. I the hill folk or not, some of these people who are getting cell phones and they're watching, who's gonna? What are those stupid shows? Where you're trying to sing and win.
Personally, I love CSI Miami.
I still think that whether this is what's happening. They're still hillbillies, but they, you know, they want their TV. And you just got it. We're just going about this all wrong.
And by the way, Susan says, not just cranky. If we can manage it, we're drunk on Everclear. You know, that Everclear that they filter through the peat moss. She signs it, Susan. Yeah.
I think cranky and drunk makes a much more interesting hill person.
You got to remember that, unless I am mistaken, Zoroastrianism was born in that hill country, and that involved the priests getting wasted on something called HAOMA. And I don't think to this day we know exactly what it was, but again, it was a religion invented by hill people that involved getting senseless. Just saying. But, you know, just to go back for a minute, another stupid film reference, but it's backed up by a book that's actually backed up by the Congressional Record. Charlie Wilson's War.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of sending those self-same Russians that you referenced home with their entire economy in a shambles and their army a wreck, Charlie Wilson, congressman from Texas, then said, well, boys, time to do the next step. I need a couple $1 million for school building in Afghanistan. And the Congress said, shut up. Get out of the way. We're not sending any more. No, the Russians are gone. There's no fun spending money in Afghanistan anymore. We're not killing anybody. But if you think about it, if what Charlie Wilson had wanted at the end of Russia's occupation, the USSR's occupation of Afghanistan, Reverbo, the Taliban never would have taken hold in the first place.
Huge opportunity squandered.
And so, you know.
We do squander our opportunities, though.
Yeah.
We just don't seem to. Who is advising our people anymore? How many more examples of this? Bad course of action. This hasn't worked since Korea. Who's still claiming that this is the way to go?
General McChrystal. Because he's had a career, and this is not overt criticism, this is not blame, but he's had a career that's predicated on fixing problems by blowing the problem up and killing it. Because he's military. You know, this reminds me of Dwayne, who was Dwayne Hunn, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, talking about that National Global Service Initiative, the American World Service Corps.
Mm.
You know, we need a segment of our population that is equally committed to problem solving that doesn't involve blowing up and killing things.
I don't even know why we're even. I've never heard such crazy talk. I don't even know why I don't even understand this. How are we ever, thanks, but global warming, that's just not a serious issue with me. You know, poverty, that's not, I can't get it with my, I can't get around that. Education, I'm sorry. Healthcare, that ain't big enough for me. I want a good old fashioned enemy I can shoot.
Well, what was it that, was it Lee? Was it Lee during our Civil War that was credited with saying, it is a good thing that war is so horrible, lest we love it too much, or something like that? Somebody will correct me very, very promptly, I'm sure.
Oh, and one of his descendants, no doubt, was in front of Congress last week telling them, don't worry, we don't need any regulation, banking regulations. The ghosts of the last recession are still strong in our minds.
Nice segue on that.
Don't mess with me tonight. I'm pissed off.
It sounds like a little bit.
I'm just so sad. The people dying. I don't know. What would we have done? What would we have done if Gore was president? What would we have?
You do that time travel thing too, don't you? What does September 11th, 2001 look like with President Gore in office like he was supposed to be?
Well, we can't undo the meeting that they had where they discussed how much they wished for another Pearl Harbor. That happened a couple years before that election.
The guy who licked his comb before he ran it through, Paul Wolfowitz.
I was going to guess any of the Baldwin brothers.
We can't undo the fact that he delivered a commencement address at the United States Military Academy a week and or 3 months and 5 days, i.e. around June the 6th, I think, 2001, in which he said, "I can't tell you what's coming, but just don't be surprised. Be prepared to be surprised." That's what he told the graduating class at West Point 3 months before September 11th.
Oh, yeah, I don't. Let's just say if it turns out that, you know, they enabled all this in one way or another, I won't be surprised. I mean, I know enough about history not to be surprised at any of this stuff. I was joking around with you about your swine flu. By the way, how's that coming along?
I think I'm well for the most part, still getting my strength back. Ferg is sick as a dog.
Oh, man.
He's missed 2 straight days of school and 2 straight days of football practice, and it takes darn near, it takes a lot to slow him down. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Football practice, especially, I can imagine. But I was mentioning that maybe somebody sent you the swine flu and how exciting that conspiracy might be, just elevating the horn to these all-powerful, you know, this all-powerful force. And then there was something about, because what if we all found out that all those people that were rendered to these secret prisons outside the country to be tortured, what if those secret prisons were somewhere in Utah? Would you be surprised?
Not a dime's worth.
Not a dime's worth. So I'm on the same page as you with Mr. Wolfowitz and with all this stuff. But, yeah, you just kind of wonder. I mean, Obama, I was convinced that here was a man who was going to follow up on his campaign promises, and he's still...
Did you see the skewering that Saturday Night Live gave him? I think the guy's name is Fred Arneson or something like that. Does a scarily resemble, he resembles Obama significantly. And along the lines of what you're talking about, just absolutely nails, President Obama. You know, everybody, and I never know how liberals are going to respond when the political humorists turn it on us. Because, you know what? We're funny, too. You know, it's not like the right wing has a monopoly on getting it wrong politically. We do that, too, sometime. And I mean to tell you that Saturday Night Live just absolutely drilled Barack Obama. Recently. I've got the audio right here.
Is an address by the President of the United States.
Good evening and congratulations to Rio for getting the 2016 Olympics. And to the Olympic Committee, I say, good luck with Rio. Now, last year I was elected with a mandate to bring this country change we could believe in. And as time has passed, it has become clear that this promise is troubling to some people. There are those on the right who are angry. They think that I'm turning this great country into something that resembles the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany. But that's just not the case. Because when you look at my record, it's very clear what I've done so far. And that is... nothing. Nada. Almost 1 year and nothing to show for it. You don't believe me? You think I'm making it up? Take a look at this checklist. Now, on my first day in office, I said I'd close Guantanamo Bay. Is it closed yet? No. I said we'd be out of Iraq. Are we? Not the last time I checked. I said I'd make improvements in the war in Afghanistan. Is it better? No, I think it's actually worse. How about healthcare reform? Hell no. I even went personally to try to bring the Olympics to Chicago in 2016. It didn't work out. But in this case, there's some good news with the bad. For every person who buys an American car in the next 6 months, you're going to get one of these.
A Chicago 2016 t-shirt.
Now, I just don't see why the right is so riled up. I mean, how do you think the left feels? They're the ones that should be mad. Now, I'm sure they thought I would have addressed at least one of the following things by now. Global warming. Nope. Immigration reform. Nope. Gays in the military. Nuh-uh. Limits on executive powers. Nope. Torture prosecutions. Nope. So looking at this list, I'm seeing two big accomplishments. Jack and squat. And remember, I can do whatever I want. I have a majority in both houses of Congress. I could make it mandatory for all gays to marry and require all cars to run on marijuana. But do I? No. But it's not all bad news. I have a few accomplishments. The Cash for Clunkers program really stimulated the economy. Unfortunately, it was the economy of Japan. Let's see what else. Also, I killed a fly on TV. Remember that? I brought a white police officer and a black professor together for a beer. Who else could do that? You're right, Oprah, but no one else. So please stop saying this country is on the road to socialism. If that were actually the case, I'd be making some real changes. Instead, it took me 4 months to pick out a dog. So all of you frothing Glenn Beck supporters, put away those tri-corner hats and those Photoshop pictures of me as a Joker. Because if I see any more of this hateful rhetoric, I'm going to have to take drastic action. Nah, not really.
Nah, not really.
That was awesome. The first 250 days, zero.
Nah, not really.
Not really. So I did get those two put there for a beer. We did get the vice president's 67 Firebird finally washed and detailed. Got that done.
That's true.
It is amazing. I will admit everything.
But we haven't waxed it yet.
No, everything he's been accused of doing by the right wing hate machine, it really is just all bogus. He hasn't done a thing.
That's the sort of beep 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 beep. That's the alert mechanism to let you know that the whole right wing objection to him is the fact that he's a black dude.
Pretty much. What's the point to something? Yeah, of course, I'm still hanging in.
Well, so am I. I'm more taken aback by this made-up garbage.
I don't know. Maybe he's just had it all his life. He's the smooth talker. He's just a totally smart guy. Maybe he's just had it easy or something. I'm trying to figure the guy out. Because at some point, you really do have to cut those train cars loose in the back. Because these people just got their hands on an emergency brake. I mean, you gotta cut them loose. So I'm hoping that he's gonna wake up tomorrow and go, well, that's right. But we're gonna just push it through anyway.
Well, you know, like any president, he realizes that his main job in his first term is to get a second one.
And then, by golly, that's when we're really going to get some stuff done.
So a friend of mine has offered this up, and I thought this was kind of interesting. But it's no damn excuse. That it's just more political, another political component. The Bush backlash was really what was responsible for upsetting the balance in government. In other words, there were some flukes that, you know, for 20, 30, 40 years, they never elected a Democrat. I mean, hell, where I live, Elizabeth Dole got bounced out of there, right? And so these could be considered flukes, and I think, you know, we've got an election. God, it's coming up in another year. And so we see where I'm going with this. Now suddenly you've got to play nice and find the middle ground, lest you lose those, you know, fluky new Democratic seats where they go back to where the way they used to be.
Oh, by the way, there is one little interesting tidbit of good news. I think it's good news. You know, I did mention that yesterday was the first Monday in October, and it wasn't the first Monday in October because I mentioned it, Reverbo, but it really was the first Monday in October, which meant that the Supreme Court went back to work.
Yes, yes.
Yesterday, this is not a joke, brand new Justice Sonia Sotomayor asked more questions yesterday than Clarence Thomas has asked in 3 straight years.
Excuse me.
So maybe...
This is kind of a good news, bad news kind of comment.
Yeah, on the one hand, that she's interested... And then the question remains, how will she be interested? Because, you know, this stupid Mojave Cross case.
Yeah.
Remember, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia.
Oh, yeah.
Are all, what? Right-wing Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
So is Kennedy. So is Sonia Sotomayor. I don't think Kennedy and Sonia Sotomayor are like the Opus Dei weirdo kind of Roman Catholic that the rats are. But, you know, I said this during the confirmation process, I'm a lot more disturbed, not by her rulings, but by her, you know, really, really, you know, she's not a little bit Roman Catholic. And by saying a little bit, this is not about being Catholic. I would be saying this if she was a Southern Baptist. I'd say, you know, she's not a little bit Southern Baptist.
Yikes.
What I'm talking about is having a religious majority on the court of one particular. Remember that Martian we were talking about?
Yes.
And how they wouldn't see monolithic Christianity the way we sort of identify it.
Mm.
Well. I get creeped out by, I would be creeped out, to make it abundantly clear, I would be creeped out by 6 Buddhists. I would be creeped out by 6 Hindus. I would be creeped out by 6 Jews. 6 Muslims.
I don't care for the proportions up there.
And so I'm worried about this Mojave Cross case because, you know, if you're steeped in that, if you're steeped in that tradition that says your ticket out of hell and into heaven is going to be in jeopardy if you tell them to take down a really tacky piece of whatever it is, religious iconography, if it is, your immortal soul's going to be in danger, then I got a problem with that. And that's why I'm not looking for a good outcome on the Mojave Desert Cross case.
I don't like where you're going with this.
Well, I don't like where I think it's going to wind up either, Reverbo.
I mean, they're not supposed to do that. I live I've got the rose-colored glasses on here. I mean, otherwise they just say, well, you can't get divorced, no matter how bad you want to.
Well, you know, I don't
do that.
We don't answer these questions anymore But I'm not feeling real good about Roe and come on, versus Connecticut.
Connecticut, yeah.
Stupid brain cell. Why'd they have to go and kill it? Griswold. I'm not feeling real good about Roe and Griswold with a religious majority on the court. Not because, you know, like back in 19, I can't vote for that Kennedy feller because he'll take his orders from the Pope. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the stuff that goes way deep down under the skin, past the muscle, and into the bone, Reverbo, where, you know, well, it's why I call myself a recovering Southern Baptist.
It's the fun and fundamental.
Yeah, because you never get over it. You know, bless his heart, Bart Kopp refers to himself, I guess, as a recovering Catholic or something like that. Our buddy Brian up in New Hampshire the other night referred to himself as a fallen Catholic. And I got an email saying, next time Brian says that, tell him there ain't nothing fallen about him. If anything, it's recovery. We're in recovery. We're getting over the damage that was done to us when we had little tiny impressionable child's minds. And you know what happened? You know, when you're going to see, there's a lot more involved, and I will defer to Lottie in the chat room on this. There's a lot more involved with being a kid and raised Catholic than there is being a kid raised Baptist. There's lunacy on both sides. But it's a lot more, they've had 2,000 years to get it right in terms of really, really getting the indoctrination deep, 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 deep down into the bone. And so, you know, it's not Rome that bothers me. It's home that bothers me. And by home, I mean the stuff that's way down deep where the heart is. Make sense?
You mean after they put their hand on the after they swear their allegiance to the Constitution and they go home. You mean that part?
Well,
really see what they're thinking.
Well, deep down inside them, when they put their hand on the Bible and swear to uphold the Constitution, they started getting exposed to that Bible long before they ever started getting exposed to the Constitution.
So are we saying, have we come around, are we agreeing, so is religion the cause of all our problems? I thought it was money.
They're kind of one and the same in most instances, aren't they, Reverbo?
Good grief. I mean, I thought this experiment, I don't know, is it coming to an end over here?
That's the question that we always have to be answering, because if we're always trying to answer that question, then maybe we're always cognizant of what a threat there is. You know, you mentioned the Air Force Academy being a particularly pernicious little hive of fundamentalism.
Yeah.
You know how it is with me on Saturdays. I start watching college football. I start watching the pregame show about 10 a.m. and I shut things down with the late night final.
I was going to say that you probably think you wake up at 8 and think, well, it's happy hour somewhere in the world.
Nah, I'm not that bad yet. Not yet. I left those days behind when we were partying in our bathrobes in the parking lot holding down the parking space for the kegger. But never mind.
He's never gotten over the college football fix. It's tough to get over. I was there for decades.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so, lo and behold, I'm watching highlights of, oh, gosh, maybe it was either Army or Navy versus Air Force, right? And they're after the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. And there was this shot of a wideout streaking down the sidelines into the end zone. And I don't know what the outcome was, because it was a guy from the Air Force Academy. White uniform, little lightning bolt on the right. And
yeah.
Just blazing it, just hustling down the sideline for the touchdown. And I literally looked away because I didn't want to see him stick that finger in the air and, Jesus, we scored this touchdown together. I didn't want to see it.
believe
because what was immediately coming to mind was, look, there goes the Air Force Academy, the hottest hotbed of militarized religious fundamentalism in this country. But that's not to say that it isn't happening at West Point, that it isn't happening at Annapolis. For all I know, it's happening at the Coast Guard Academy or the Merchant Marine Academy.
Yeah. And this is a blatant, to me, just such an outrage of religion. Just we're letting it insinuate itself into government like this. And you notice that I can't think of a single representative. I can't think of anyone who is on a bandwagon on this, is on a crusade for this, is even gives a damn about this. I mean, how much more obvious can it get? That's why I'm saying they just, when they're done shooting all the, they'll get to us. We're on their list.
Oh, yeah. Right? Die heretic.
At least they think that they'll get to us. We'll see what happens. But,
Well, the only hope is that they'll take each other's numbers down significantly enough. Well, never mind. That's even brutal in its own right.
I thought I hated communism, but their thoughts on religion and their thoughts on the distribution of wealth, they do resonate in some ways, don't they?
Yeah, they kind of do. You know, it's context is everything. And if you remember that Marx and Engels were writing what they were writing in the midst of one of the most predatory eras of human abuse by business and moneyed interests in the history of the world, it all sort of falls into place. But as we wait for the outcome of this Mojave Cross case, because I ain't going to call it no war memorial. But as we wait for the outcome of this Mojave Cross case, I'm just thinking, you know what? You know what Mount Rushmore needs? Mount Rushmore needs a big old cross sticking right out of the top of Abe Lincoln's head. That's what Mount Rushmore needs.
Jesus Christ.
We need us one of them big old Jesus statues like they got down there in the Rio de Janeiro. Already have.
We'll see what happens between tonight and tomorrow. Something, no doubt.
It never ceases. It never ceases. As long as there's a religion industry, I think I got a job.
Oh, boy. We still have to, I'm telling you, we still have to make a road trip somehow to the Creation Museum. This is a must-do.
Oh, I think it is. Now, you know, if we can just keep the lights on here and get past October 21st.
Yeah, I've been meaning to come up with an excuse for that. Like, I haven't worked in 2 years, but...
Well, you know, that's a pretty good one. I mean, yeah, I don't want anybody knocking off the local 7-Eleven or anything.
No, but here's another way you got to think about it, though. There are people still worse off than me, and I was thinking, you know, if it turns out that I do end up kind of, you know, destitute and living in a box under a bridge, it probably won't be because I sent you that extra $20 in October. That won't be that big of a factor. So I'm mulling it over. I may just.
You know, when I mull, I use cinnamon sticks and whole cloves.
That's a good way to go. I mean, you're just going month. You've been going month to month for months.
Yeah, it's just that it well, there's that word again. It ramped up to full on sweat condition alpha this month.
Ain't that a little stressful?
No, it's a lot stressful.
You guys have bumped it up to condition red.
Oh, we are. Yeah. The sweat condition alpha all the way.
I mean, man, how do you do this without serious alcohol and drugs over there? Whew. Glad you just get
can't afford them.
No, you can't afford them. All right, well, I'm thinking about it. I haven't abandoned it. I'm thinking about helping you one more time here.
Well, that was not a direct pitch to you, Reverbo, at all.
But you got to quit. I mean, I'm always in a good mood before I call you, and you got to show me something here. You got to. You know, I ain't.
I don't know. We got. Well, you know, see, that's another thing. We get past October the 21st. Somewhere down the road, we get the camera. We go to video, and I'm a song and dance man then.
Oh wow!
You don't want that.
Oh boy. All right, right, I got to do some thinking about this.
All right, Reverbo.
Okay.
Make it personal, later. Brother.
Yeah, you too.
Later. Bye. Calling from the hidden lair where he is the chief high priest of the possum goddess. That's our buddy Reverbo. And let's see. I tell you what. Got some folks on hold. We're halfway through the program. No, we'll... See, we got the Green News Report tonight. And I like to always make sure that we get to that. So, okay, we're going to try to go through the phone calls. And then top of the hour, we'll take our top of the hour break, go to the Green News Report. Does that work for you? I hope. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, man? It's Gary.
Hey, Gary. What's up?
Oh, not much. I was just listening to the program. I listened to the SNL skit. Thought it was pretty funny.
Fred is, I can't remember, I think it's Fred Arneson. It's not as funny as, say, the George Bush impressions, because George Bush was funnier just by virtue of being himself. But Fred, if his name's Fred Arneson or whatever, he has got Barack Obama to a science. And of course, that clip's up on YouTube. You can go find it. I found it at Bart Cop. If you want to go and see it that way, just go over to bartcop.com and scroll about halfway down the page and there's a link to it.
I didn't think it was totally factual, but yeah, that's my opinion. But I thought it was interesting. But I guess the cadence and everything is there, so I guess that's what makes comedy nowadays. What can you do?
Well, the line about who could get the white cop and the black college professor together for a beer. Well, okay, Oprah could, but who else? That was funny. That was funny.
Yeah, I think the only problem with it is that And you know I've been about it. You know, I'm not necessarily an Obama booster, but you know, I'm very much believing in his presidency. My only thing to say to this is, you know, I keep hearing this Obama, what I call the Obama pile on now. And I understand some people are anxious and all this other kind of stuff. But you know, I worked on a campaign, you know, I went and knocked on some doors. I'm kind of familiar with what he said he was gonna do in the time frame he's gonna do. And I just think there's a lot of this is being put out here by the media or whatever. And I think some of us are kind of falling into the trap of like, we're getting a little lazy in our analysis of things. And we're not really looking at it from a clear perspective. I mean, first of all, even in the skit, I mean, the first thing he did, the biggest thing he did, was pass the stimulus package. And he spent a lot of political capital on that. I mean, you had a Republican, you come over, three Republicans. You had one that took so much heat. Factor, he had to actually move over. So for anybody to say he hasn't done anything this year within the first 9 months, I mean, you got to really start looking in the mirror and checking yourself. I'm sorry.
I thought the thesis of the piece, and you know, when we start analyzing comedy, I think the comedy goes out the window. But I thought that the thesis of the piece was not his accomplishment or lack thereof, but rather the right wing hysteria of what that one's doing to the country.
Because
nothing's...
But taking it that way, though.
Yeah, nothing's any different. You know, we're not moving toward socialism. No, we're not moving toward communism. We're not moving at all. I mean, if he was the radical...
We're not moving down. That's the thing. At least we can say maybe it's stabilized. Would you kind of agree with that or no?
We're still hemorrhaging jobs. So I don't. They're saying that there are people saying, well, the recession's over. But you know what? There's a whole lot of people still out of work for whom the recession is not over, and it's not a recession, it's a depression. So you know, my metrics tend to go along the lines of the well-being of the American people, as opposed to statistics about Wall Street, because I think at this point in time we have learned, have we not, Gary, that there is a distinct disconnect between those two things.
Yeah, and I think if you're in a critical condition and you're on a table and not even moving into another room where you stabilize, that doesn't mean you're up and walking yet. And I think that's where we are right now. I just think that, I think like you said, with the stimulus package and all the other things, you know, just some person who kind of knows a little bit about the banking industry or what happened. I mean, if they had not poured that money in there, China.
Oh, we would be in
money out of everything.
We'd be in full on hemorrhage mode, and China may very well have called all the hot checks that George Bush wrote.
Oh, they would have called it, and Arabs are going to be calling it. I mean, they're going to call it probably eventually anyway, but it would have been called quicker. And that we really would have, it would have been worse than the Great Depression. So, you know, he's done some stuff that he feel like he had to do. But I think we, you know, my only opinion is, and you know how I am, you know, I've sent you emails and told you that I have a more long-term view on all of this. Anyway, just, that's just my nature. But,
well, American politics, by its very structure, tends to be glacial in its movement. And as that brilliant essay that we looked at, we examined a couple of months back noted, our political structure is not set up to deal with massive crises and is not set up to deal with wholesale change. So while we can talk about change on the campaign trail, anybody who buys into the idea that there's going to be something, there's going to be some, you know, sea change, to use the phrase, or, you know, difference between night and day change, it ain't going to happen, not because of want of political will or, well, okay, that's some of it, but not because of any given political personality, but because the system itself does not admit of that kind of change. It does not tolerate it. It will not allow it to happen.
Of course. Barack Obama can go out tomorrow and just say everything we want him to say, and I guarantee you, all he will get is a big pushback. The fact that you even hear the generals arguing about, you know, at him now about the Afghanistan strategy, I think some people on the left should be happy, because at least that means he's rethinking it. You know, I mean, at least that says maybe there's something that he's trying to look at a better way to do it.
Well, again, I like the metrics. I like the metrics of the American people, and I found this one. I found this one telling. This from CQ Politics, Congressional Quarterly. Majorities of American adults think, and this is a heck of a note, majorities of American adults think that the war in Afghanistan cannot be won. Okay, that's part one. And part two, that the most likely conclusion of it will be no conclusion at all. The poll was conducted from October the 1st to the 4th by Claris Research Group. 68%, Gary, of the respondents said that the United States will not win or lose the war in Afghanistan, but that it will simply go on without resolution.
And I'm going to tell you something, and that is acceptable to America. Because, see, you know, the one thing about, you know, anything else, I don't usually call in. One thing I do know about is this, because, you know, I'm here, you know, you know, and I'll just tell you, you know, I've worked with the U.S. Army as a private contractor. Just, you know, full disclosure, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I still do contracting. I don't work, not in the military, but I still do contracting, you know, for NASA and other places. I'm here in Maryland. And I have a lot of families that work in the military. So I'm very much familiar with what's going on. And I have, I'll tell you, I have family in intelligence agencies. Not, you know,
yeah.
They can't tell, obviously, talk to me about certain things. And I know I've gotten into that. But here's the thing with Afghanistan, people must understand. I know, I think it was David or somebody was taking an issue with something I was saying about Blackwater, whatever. And I'm just going to tell you this, and people need to understand this. Compared to the CIA, Blackwater and all these other little agencies that people have issues with is a fly squad. I mean, it's literally a fly on the window pane of a skyscraper, as many people need to say. They don't have nothing on the CIA. CIA has done more crap than Blackwater and any other people can ever do. So when I hear people going on about Blackwater, I just look at them like, you don't know what you're talking about. Because the CIA, number one, is the reason we're in Afghanistan. Type in Operation Cyclone. I mean, you got into it a little bit with Charlie Wilson, but actually it started before that. Actually, Carter administration, the Gerald Ford administration, actually people actually pushed the CIA. And the reason why they did it, because obviously everybody knows, Russia was trying to make a play for the Middle East, as everybody has made. And there was no way that the American empire was going to allow Russia to take care of the Middle East. And that's ultimately what we're there for. And when, as I mentioned before, we have residue, what they call residue there. We have ex-CIA agents, and we train those people. You know, one of the calls was saying earlier about we're fighting farmers. You're not fighting farmers. You think the farmers would have stopped? The Russians? The Russians would have flattened a bunch of farmers. They're all CIA trained. Farmers sitting up in those villages and stuff like that. I mean, you had it mixed in with some Afghanistan, but that's what you got happening there. So you have a full-fledged intelligence war going on. That thing is going to be going on for the next 50 years, maybe even 100. There's no coming out of Afghanistan. People are just going to have to understand that. I mean, if we don't really understand the history of what's going on there, we're going to make these comments you know, and say things, and it's just going to be really wasted air. We're not coming out of Afghanistan. You know, I tell people that, Bob, and I know people want to hear it, but they're not coming out of there. It's a strategic haven that is going to be occupied by us for the next 50 to 100 years. And, you know, McCain said it during the campaign.
So the boxes just keep coming home.
They're going to just, I think what's going to happen is, this is what they're trying to do from my understanding, is that Obama obviously is trying to move to a more intelligence-based thing, to drop the body count. You know, you want to do some kind of covert operation using either drones, and they got some supposedly new technology that nobody knows about, however they want to deal with this situation. But, yeah, there's going to be a blood fight, but I think they're trying to figure out a way to do it, obviously, with the minimal count. But these people don't count bodies. You know that, right? We count bodies. They don't count bodies. This is about empire. That's what it's about. So
yeah, it's about living somewhere and resisting the people who invade you. I mean, is there? And I used to have such a devil of a time, Gary, trying to explain to wingnuts when it turned out that Iraq was not going to be the cakewalk that we were told it was, and that they weren't greeting us as liberators, and they weren't showering us with flowers like that psychotic old madman Rumsfeld had said. And this is back when I was on terrestrial radio, trying to explain to a wingnut that if you live somewhere, and if someone invades where you live, that doesn't split you, that coalesces you. And that that because it is your family that is threatened, it becomes incumbent upon the person invaded to resist with all their might. And I used to, the conclusion that I drew from it, based on the difficulty that I had explaining that principle to these wingnuts, was that if we were ever invaded by Arabs or Chinese or anybody else, that it was abundantly obvious to me that the appeasers and the collaborators would be the Republicans, the wingnuts, and the Second Amendment gun freaks. Because being authoritarian, they will respond to any authority that has enough power to kill them.
Exactly. Well, you know, if you don't have a broader, that's what I'm saying, if you don't have a broader perspective on this, you know, in that you're talking about body bags just here, here's another thing I can, you know, share with you, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that, for example, you know, when Reagan, because they were spending so much money in, you know, Afghanistan, CIA, Reagan was trying to push through monies, you know, to fund Iran-Contra scandals and everything else, and he couldn't get it approved because all that money was being sucked into Afghanistan. So they went backdoor, and what the CIA did, and this is somewhat documented, you know, you probably even find on the internet, that they started selling drugs, you know, and, you know, they started using crack cocaine and going through the black communities and taking profits off of that to fund those wars. So the CIA has destroyed a lot of my black communities. So, you know, for me, that's why I kind of like when I hear people talking about Blackwater, and, you know, I respect everybody's opinion. It just infuriates me because it's like, you don't understand. The CIA is your problem.
Well, the CIA is the problem, but I guess, I guess what is most horrifying out of the Blackwater nexus, Gary, is even if it is the minuscule, and I'm not doubting you, the minuscule degree that you describe, even if that's the case, it is this idea that we have now outsourced murder, that we have private contractored murder, that we have a mercenary army that is as large or larger than the military force that we have in place, and that answers to virtually no one. I mean, I remember, again, going back to the early days when we first started finding out this miserable business. I remember seeing that our mercenary force was comprised and, you know, hired by things like Wackenhut or the Blackwater, you know, that whole dirty crowd. I remember seeing that our force was comprised of old death squad members from El Salvador,
old apartheid knee breakers from South Africa. You know, the baddies from virtually everywhere on the planet gravitated to us to go and do the dirty mercenary business in Iraq. And that is horrifying. That is sickening.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. I mean, my thing is this. What's the difference between a CIA, if you give a directive mission, and you give it to the CIA, you can give it to the Army, or you can give it to Blackwater. What is the difference? Only difference is the pay scale, pay grade. What I'm saying is that the U.S.
Yeah, the Blackwater guy gets paid better.
That's what I'm saying, and that's the whole thing. My whole thing is not, I'm not arguing with David anybody about the Blackwater stuff being bad, which, you know, I guess people are trying to present it. I'm not arguing with that. My argument is that if you kind of just try to, it's almost like if you say that Blackwater is doing all these bad things and then are just letting the CIA off the hook, or you're letting, you know, or the U.S. Army, who maybe don't know what they're doing, is bad, then that becomes my issue with you, because I'm thinking to myself, you're not thinking broadly. My point is that the CIA has done way worse things. I mean, war is bad business. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Every now and then, maybe, you know, you get a Hitler or something, you can, you know, it's good. But in general, you know, it's bad business. It's nasty, it's dirty, it's not fair. Innocent people are going to die whenever you start a war. It's not like, you know, just the guys on the battlefield die. There's always going to be, you know, casualties. I mean, there's always going to, you know. So those type of things we have to kind of take into consideration. But I think we still have to have a broader understanding that the U.S. has so much residue and so much stuff they've done in the past that even I can almost make a justification for them just trying to clean up their own messes. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of people in Afghanistan right now, and villages are being attacked by the Taliban. And the Taliban is the Frankenstein that we created. You know, I think I heard some general say recently, he said, yes, Frankenstein is in Afghanistan, and now he's off the table. And I thought that was just a great quote because, you know, we created, and technically we created Taliban. I mean, the first, they were created, I think, when the first Al-Qaeda, whatever they call it, came out, you know, not really.
Well, remember, we called them, back when they were the good guys, we called them the Mujahideen.
Yeah, Mujahideen, that was the main tag, but, you know, they came out of, you know, that central region, I was Pakistan. That's where it was born. And here's the other thing that you can even take this even a little further. You know, people talk about 9/11 being an inside job. Well, one needs to ask yourself the question, you know, Dick Cheney and these people involved and all this other thing. You got CIA people who have now gone so deep in that they've kind of gone apocalypse now on you and turned to the other way because they've learned all the crap that Americans have done. You know what I'm saying? That they decide to say, hey, you know what? You know, and then somehow some other CIA covert say, hey, why don't you do this? You know, we see it all the time where, you know, the CIA people come in and pretend like they're a part of this bomb plot. You saw with the guy in Afghanistan, the guy that got arrested recently. There were CIA working with him, telling him, you know, yeah, let's blow up these bombs. They want to help him get the materials. And then at the last minute, they turn him in. Well, what happened if you put a couple guys in there and they don't turn the guy in? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Hey, boom, there you go. And
yeah, they let's say they go rogue or they turn out to have been double agents all along. There's all kinds of bad outcomes, and there's only one good one. That's a tough number to make on the dice roll.
Can we close the CIA, Bob?
Can we close it? No.
If we get a mass movement of people say, we want the Central Intelligence Agency shut down. We just want to have a standing army, you know. We want to have a bid and some kind of say as a people. If we just want to be a true democracy, shouldn't we have say of any foreign aggression that we take place in?
Well, the CIA was born out of institutional jealousy because we were made, it was made abundantly clear to us in the Second World War that, you know, the older established countries that we were allies with in the war had far better intelligence networks set up, and that we were sort of the bumbling and stumbling along through it, or at least that's how we were made to feel. So at the end of the Second World War, naturally what happens is the OIS, which was, you know, part of the military structure and not an independent group, but the OIS was morphed into its own its own animal that we decided to name the Central Intelligence Agency. And it was no sooner born than it started screwing up.
Yeah, but I understand all that. I mean, I'm familiar with the history, but what I'm saying is that why can't we have it? And I'm just, this is, I don't necessarily agree with this theory. I'm just putting it out there. Is that why can't we just have, I mean, you always have somebody, you know, collecting intelligence. But why does the CIA are giving funds to actually fund military operations? That's what I'm talking about, you know, based on their own personal intelligence or whatever. Why does that have to be the case? And if it does, even if you have to do it, to me I'm saying that...
Well, the short answer to the why, Gary, is because there's no oversight to speak of. You know, because all the congressional oversight is all secret, and they have a secret budget, and they spend secret money, and they do secretly evil things because they're a secret agency, and the whole operating philosophy behind the CIA is directly contrary to the operating philosophies upon which this country is founded.
So are you saying that we will always or must have a CIA?
I'm not saying we must, but I'm saying we will.
Okay.
Because the sheeple that go to sleep every night worried about whether or not Osama's going to turn the local Walmart into a heap of smoke and rubble tomorrow, that crowd is put at ease, falsely I would submit, but put at ease by the idea of knowing that we've got some really smart spies out there, and they read The Hunt for Red October and Clear and Present Danger, and they want there to be a Jack, whatever his name is, out there who's looking at the satellite photos and says, see, I see the bad guy right there. Now all we need is a, you know what I'm talking about.
It's a phony sense
of security. It's the same thing that a baby gets from a security blanket or a whoopee or a pacifier or its thumb stuck in its mouth. You know, the modern paranoid fundamentalist motivated right wing authoritarian superstructure, wow, what a mouthful that is, you know, they are basically sucking their thumbs. The only problem is the thumb is out there, you know, it's a murderous thumb, it's a homicidal thumb, it's a thumb that thumbs its own nose at the Constitution, but it gives them that authoritarian buzz that they crave so much, and there's also a heck of a lot of money to be made in it.
Yeah, I have a different theory about where the world is going now with the expanded base of knowledge, and it's this. I mean, you think about it. I mean, you have neighbors, correct?
Yes.
Live next to you. I mean, do you think your neighbors are spying on you?
No.
They're not bothering you, right?
Right.
You know, if you take care of your business and do what you got to do, everything's cordial, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm trying to say that U.S. does more to piss people off. You know, yeah, we do some good in the world. Don't get me wrong. And you know, we do some good in the world. But we do so much to piss people off that if we just get out of business of pissing people off, like you said, try to become a little bit more self-efficient by making our own energy, clean energy, that could sustain ourselves and not destroy a whole freaking country and the landscape and everything else. If we focus, to me, I believe if we really just focus on those type of things, and, you know, Obama's tried to talk about this or whatever, whether he believes or not, I don't know, but he's tried to talk about this, being more independent. You know, I'm going to show you a good example, and this is why I kind of wanted to get a little bit into that Brazil thing last week, but I know we can't get into the night because of the time frame, but Brazil took a long look in the mirror a couple of years ago. I remember I was reading about it because, you know, I tell you, I have family and friends down there. I've been down there a number of times. And they tried to move very much in the way of being very independent. You know, certain parts of South America, you know, trying to be independent. Because, you know, and the thing is, it's starting to pay dividends for them. You know, granted, they don't have a large population there. They have a lot of resources. And, you know, they're trying to be just very independent. And it's starting to work for them. And that, to me, I think that's the new model. The more and more countries, you have to really get independent. America got to get out of this colonial, European dominating phase. That phase worked, I guess, for a number of years and it's been successful. I don't think you can continually colonizing every planet on the earth. It's an old model that worked, but it's not going to work anymore. Everybody sees what's going on now through the internet or whatever, and knowledge is being increased. And the more people see that you're raving and robbing and stealing from them, you're going to catch blowback. I'm sorry. we got to change.
Well, exactly. And, you know, what you're describing there, Gary, reminds me of something else. And it's something that I really love, even though I can't comprehend it yet. There are people in the Horn family who are helping me. I love the open source movement. Because as off topic as that may seem, it really isn't. Because, you know, part and parcel of the reason that we have these bad feelings is that we have stuff here, and we have a list of who will sell the stuff to, or who we will allow corporations to sell the stuff to, and we have most favored nation trading partner status. And so we'll say to one country, hey, you know, we don't want to do business with you. But over there, your neighbor, the one that's the brutal dictator that kills his own people, we can't wait to sell poison gas weapons to him. And we do it all the time. And so I really think in the global open source movement, what you have is a rejection of that. You know, I'm thinking along the lines of like Linux. Anybody can educate themselves on Linux and work toward making it work. There is definitely a skill set and there's a learning curve, but it's out there for the world to use. And nothing the United States does can keep the world from having it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, for example, you just brought up Linux. You know that President Lula of Brazil, they took all of their, municipalities and their computers a couple of years ago and moved them to Linux. And it pissed Microsoft off.
Oh, heck yeah.
They hit, you know. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a mentality there to say, hey, look, let's get this thing going circular. You know, let's stop being so linear about everything. Everything has to go to destruction at end point, and then we got to go up and dig up and make up a whole bunch of other crap. Let's stop making everything circular so everybody just keep building it, and as it gets circular, it gets better and better, you know, and it keeps refining, and it goes upward. But America's about, like, let's sell guns, let's sell stuff that, you know, just wasteful stuff.
Whenever this discussion comes up, I never fail to think of, because she should be thought of every day in this country, I never fail to think of the woman who stood in defense of Palestinian peasants and using an American-made Caterpillar bulldozer, she was bulldozed to death by the Israelis.
That was in 2002, right?
Around about there, yeah. And I think she was from Georgia.
Yeah, no missionary or something like that. Yeah.
And she was a peace activist, and they bulldozed her to death. The Israelis did, whom we prop up with ungodly amounts of money and equipment. And somewhere off in Iowa or wherever it is they make Caterpillar, you know, some guy who's just feeding his family put in the rivets on that very bulldozer before we shipped it to Israel so it could run over that American child. And you know what? That is a system that is very much worth retooling and rethinking. Does it make sense?
Yeah. Makes sense to me. You know, we'll see what happens, but I think I'm somewhat hopeful. I mean, again, I'm not a pessimist, as you know, that we'll get it right. But I can tell you personally that just knowing that we got just so many uneducated, stupid people in this country, it's going to be a long haul. I mean, I hate that we're going to have to go through the mire, these Republicans and these idiots. But I think overall, you know, as I said before, I think that we're going to evolve to a point. I don't even think it's a question. You know, the thing is funny about, you know, I think I said something about talking about evolution. But evolution don't really give a damn what you think sometimes. You know what I mean?
No, evolution is not an upward process. It is a lateral process. It's a constant process of trying to live with the world as it exists. It doesn't, you know, evolution doesn't make value judgments per se. So you're absolutely right.
You fit in the, you either fit in the system that has been created, you know, God, not when it was created, but when it was created, that system, and you're gonna be in that system, and you can try to alter it and screw it up for a little while, but eventually the system's gonna push back, you know, and that system is a lot greater than our own understanding, and it's gonna, you know. So I'm just trying to, you know, what I try to do, and I, you know, hope, I think we all try to do, is live within that system. You know, let's not try to destroy the damn planet.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, there's that story in the New Testament about how, I guess, Jesus was getting his feet washed or anointed or something with some precious unguent. And one of the guys, you know, looked at him and said, "But Jesus, shouldn't we sell this to give to the poor?" And I love how the right wing always uses this as a justification for greed and avarice, because Jesus looks up and goes, you know, and it was one of those frustrating times. You can all, if you read it, you can hear the frustration coming from him. He just says, you know, the poor you have always with you. There's always going to be poor people, and that's sort of a, you know, don't get in a hurry, you know. Live life a little bit. But I wish somewhere along the way, this is my wishful New Testament, my wishful gospel, Gary. I wish somewhere somebody would have said, "But Jesus, what do we do about the stupid people?" Because you know what? There were stupid people then, just like there's stupid people now, and there's a lot of them, Gary. And I wish that Jesus would have looked up,
be with you.
And looked up and said, "You know what? The stupid ye will always have with ye. Deal with it." Because you know what? If we had a religion that was based on curing stupid, we might have made a little bit more progress in the last 2,000 years. But you know, that's me. Gary, great conversation, my friend. We will talk soon. Take care.
Okay, just one last thing, Bob.
Sure.
I think I had talked to you about, I don't know if you got my email in terms of the Bob Head On email.
Yeah. That I have tried, and I thought I had succeeded. Yeah, that old headonradio.com address is still what shows up as the receipt on contributions to the Horn. And I've even had phone conversations with the PayPal people about, it's gone now. No, it's not. It still shows, it all comes through.
Okay.
Because the email is not the account. The email is merely a point of contact. But I'm just trying to get the darn thing off of there. And, oy, you know, the things I wind up spending little chunks of my life on.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's where the receipt comes. That's what the receipt shows as. And I corrected that weeks ago. And a couple of weeks ago had a phone call with them about it.
Yeah, well, what happens in the account, you know, my account, like whenever you give money to somebody, whatever, it comes up and it'll put your name there and it'll be like stuck, you know, and it's like these people are, you just go back to that same name. But when I saw Head On, I was like, Bob at Head On, I was thinking, okay, so I went to the site and said, HeadOn.com, is that like corporate, you know, that thing they make or whatever. So I was a little concerned. So, that's why I've always said to you, you know, I know you can't respond to everything and I don't care if you respond to my little contributions or whatever, but I think that you definitely should have an auto reply. You know, like, you know, set up somehow on your account that, you know, how they do, you know, whatever, your webmaster can do it. So that as soon as you do get I think you can do it in PayPal or whatever, as soon as you get a contribution, all that goes out and just says, thank you from the Horn. I think, you know, I just, from my experience, that kind of helps give people a little bit more impetus.
In a sense of security that it went to the right place. Absolutely. You know,
yeah,
we just.
Sometimes you think, well, I don't know if I'm going to get it. I don't know if he's getting it. I think I would recommend definitely do that. And I'll definitely try to send you something before the 21st. I'm just waiting for this my PayPal account to get some a little more funds in it. So.
I know how it goes. And I hate the fact that we're sweating bullets like this, but it's not of our choosing.
Bullets, we have enough people. It's not a lot of money that you're asking for. I mean, I'm sure if I'm listening to this radio station, you must have thousands of
people. We do. It's just that we have generally a very, very small number of people who are willing to support it.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody just gave $10, if 1,000 people gave $10, you're set for the year, right?
Very nearly. I mean, we asked for $2,000 a month, so that's $24,000 a year.
Okay. So if
every single person who hears this program committed to $5 a month, we'd actually be able to start paying people, which would be so cool. And that's, you know, that's everybody associated with this, Gary. That's Guy James is on hiatus right now, because there's no financial support. And if we get up over that critical mass level that I mentioned, that $1,100 by the 21st, I'm gonna start shipping money to Guy.
I definitely should bet it's in at least 20, so I know that.
Well, and you have all along, and we so sincerely appreciate it. And it's just, like I said,
I don't know people's financial situation, but $5, I mean, come on. I mean, I know people can say, I'm sorry about this. People can say $5, you know. I mean, especially right now, you get a quarter. I mean, you know, I mean, just don't buy a cheeseburger, you know, take a, you know, or something, you know what I mean? Just.
Yeah.
That commitment to say, hey, I'm going to do it. I mean, if you're listening, if you're not, you know, if people are not listening, you're not listening every day, I would understand. But I can tell you, I would hate for that, for to come one day and it's not here. I wouldn't say it because I tried to give what I could. So I would not feel like, oh, it was my fault.
No.
There are going to be some people who.
But that's the, you know, that's the thing. We finally hit one of those bumps in the road where, one of those bumps in the road where if it doesn't happen by a date certain, which is October 21st, then this is over. And, you know, the fortunate thing is that we're within $400 of not sweating those bullets anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you'll make that, but like I said, I think.
You know, the problem is that's $1,100 over and above what we try to get in every month. So if we don't, you know, if we make this, but we don't make the monthly, then, by the same token, you know, we're just setting ourselves up for the same problem somewhere else down the road.
Well, you know, the main problem is too, because, you know, I've done like little small business things with people, like, you know, worked with people and things. The one thing that, you know, I feel about a subscription model, the one thing that always hurts when you're in this kind of lack of funding cycle is that you can't evolve the show. Like, you could be thinking of new ideas and coming up with better, you know what I'm saying, possibly tweaking formats, doing something different, or, you know, whatever, that can actually expand the show. But if you have to always think about, you know, what the lights are going to be coming on, you know, you don't have time to really do that. And it becomes like a death cycle. So, you know. I just hope, you know, that people will kind of step up for now, and then hopefully down the line you guys really can get somebody just kind of commit to say, hey, look, we're going to give you, you know, $34,000, you know, some private person at the end of the year where they can freaking tax write off. Come on. You know, that's what pisses me off about liberal people. You know, they want to go to all these little green, you know, I'm going to get off the phone. I know you got to talk with other people, but, you know, I listen to some of these shows, especially Air America. I hate to call them out, but it's like they go to all these little green places and, you know, these little conventions and stuff. These people have money, Bob, but they don't give any money like the right wing side does. They just don't, you know. And it's really a shame.
And the question is how
you want to just sit around and drink coffee. I mean, tea all day. You know, like the Republicans paint them. Come on, and step up. This is guerrilla warfare.
Exactly. It's what was in that note that from the anonymous writer that I read at the top of the program, Gary. He said, you know, he said, I'll be damned if I'll let this end. And you know, because he recognized that there's a real purpose behind this. This isn't something that's happening just because I was looking for something to do and this seemed more. This seemed more to my liking than saying welcome to Walmart 8 hours a day. Because that's not the case. You know, there is an operating principle and an operating philosophy behind the horn, Gary, that is intimately tied with exactly what you're talking about. We have got to get people to the people that are willing to participate in these kind of conversations, we need to have a space for them to participate in. And no offense to any of my blogging friends, blogging is not that space. It needs to be real time, and it needs to be human voices being heard. Or at least that's my philosophy. But, you know, moreover, the other problem is that, you know, we're operating on a contribution model, obviously. And everybody else out there, I can't tell you the number of, the handheld out emails I get per day, and they're all worthy. But that's the model our side has decided to operate on. You know, no one has invented a viable advertising model for this.
You know, what we reach is the equivalent of a small to medium market radio station in terms of the number of folks we reach. You know, and it's measured in thousands. But nobody's figured out a way to commercialize it. And frankly, to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure that I want to. Because the minute you take somebody's dollar to run an advertisement, that is the minute that, to some degree or another, you have sacrificed your integrity and your freedom to say what's on your mind.
You sure do. Because even if I was to pay for it, I'd be like probably coming on, you know, I'd probably call it, Bob, thank you, be a little naked, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you guys go to the direction, you know, and I'll be like, I gave you guys this money, and they're going against what I kind of believe in, you know, because I'm a Christian. And, you know, it's like, oh, boy, he's going off on that jacket again, so I would probably be hesitant. But that being said, you know, I'm a little bigger than that, so. But I understand what you're saying. So
right, and people who individually contribute are, because the nature of who we are is such that we generally say, okay, well, I don't agree with that, but I agree with the vast, you know, the tenor and the majority of what's being discussed. Not just me, but what's coming out of the mouths of the people who call the program. But, you know, but dear God, you know, you take the money from Corporation X, and you happen to get anywhere near their near and dear, and there's going to be trouble. You know, and that's business. You know, when you pay the money, you expect to have the control. I mean, there's a story out today. I was looking here earlier. The number has climbed to 19 advertisers that have dumped Glenn Beck now. And now they're not just dumping him in America. They're dumping him in the United Kingdom. How bad off are you when Guinness dumps you? You know, Guinness Stout. Celebrated its 250th birthday a couple of weeks ago. That Guinness Stout, they've dumped Glenn Beck. A grocery store chain.
Not dumping you. You're really messing up now.
Yeah, a grocery store chain in the United Kingdom called Waitrose has dumped not just Glenn Beck, but because of Glenn Beck, has dumped Fox News in the UK.
And how can that vile filth, you know, really our end times, you know, that vile filth can just make it to the top of the chain. You know, get all the money, sponsorship, whatever, major channel, you know, a bunch of foolishness, just crazy stuff. And it's like everybody's eyeballs on it. Everybody's talking about it. I've not heard the horn or anybody saying something on the horn, being on Chris Matt, you know what I mean, on the Rachel Maddow show, anything. Nowhere, no, just not or nothing. You know, even Mike Malloy, you know, anything, you know. Tom Hartman, you know, maybe Randy Rose, every now and then. But you don't hear it. But on the right wing, when you go to that side of the party, oh, yeah, you hear it. Man, you hear every, you know, they'll call them out newspaper. You know what I'm saying? You know, they get their time. You know, but the left just does not get the time. You know, I don't know what it, you know, I know it's corporate. I know it's the corporate thing. We can't deal with the left. They're against our interests. So I hear you. I understand what you're saying. That's why, you know, again, I'm not a big personal subscription model per person, but I think ultimately, you know, if you have to do that, like Barack Obama had to do it to win the election or whatever, get those little small contributions, that's what it takes. Maybe that's just what you have to do. Maybe we just all have to sign
and up. And ultimately, the nice thing about that is the more audience we build, then the lower the required contribution number becomes. You know,
I don't think it's the money, Bob. Really, me personally, I think it's me just first working out and done that kind of stuff. It's more just conditioning, you know. With me, I know I can give a certain amount. You know, I just gave out a big check to my aunt's cause, so that's why I'm going to cut down on my giving for certain things.
No worries.
And as well as something for breast cancer. But that being said, I think it's more just conditioning people. Once they get conditioned to doing it, I think that's, you know what I'm saying? I think once they get conditioned to giving for a certain cause or whatever, I think then you'll be over that hump. Or like you said, or there's some model that they feel comfortable with.
Right, and but you can't discount the idea of growing the audience, and that's the fact of the matter is, Gary, nothing grows this audience like word of mouth. Nothing has grown this audience like the good words that Mike Malloy has given us. Nothing. And when people who share their time with the horn and find value in it, and enjoy the time that they spend here, when they make an earnest mention of it, say, hey, you know, check it out. Think you'll enjoy it to other like-minded people, and they become part of this audience, then the funding model becomes, by definition, easier to accomplish simply because the number of people required to reach that funding level, it makes it, well, there's George Bush. It makes the pie higher, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I hate quoting him, but, you know, it really does. It increases the base of those who can contribute to keep it going and makes it easier for everybody all around. I'm looking to the day that I can say, congratulations, no more pitching, no more asking for contributions. We're self-sustaining, hallelujah. And however that happens, win the lottery, find something else that will support this, whatever it takes. But, you know, in the interim, all we can do is finish one day's broadcast, get ready to start the next one.
Yep. Well, just keep it going, man. Just keep it going.
All right.
I'll let you go. I know you got a lot of calls.
All right. Thanks, Gary. You have a good night.
Okay.
Always good to hear from you. Bye now.
All right.
Okay. We're a little past the top of the hour and got a couple of blinking lights, but by all means, stick around. Don't go disappearing. What we're going to do is we're going to take a little break because, dadgummit, three solid hours in this chair gets a little bit difficult, I promise you. But we'll take a little break. We'll check out the Green News Report on its way from our pals Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And then we'll come back and we'll finish the program. There'll be about half an hour's worth of conversation left at that point in time. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice, and that's no joke. The only reason this network exists is because of your commitment to see that it exists. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be right back.
It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day. While senators on a holiday. The army recruiters in the parking lot. Hustling the kids, they're juggling pot. Listen, young man, listen to my. You get an M16 and a Kevlar vest. You might come home with one less leg, but this thing will surely keep a bullet at your chest. So come on, come on, sign up, come on. This one's nothing like Vietnam, except for the bullets, except for the bombs, except for the youth that's gone. So we keep it on. War on terror is a war on peace. Telling you they're gonna
you and telling you if they support the truth. And don't let them fool you with their milk and honey. No, they only want your money. One step forward and two step back. One step forward and two step back. Why the veterans get no respect? PTSD and a broken back. Take a look at where your money's gone. See, take a look at what they spend it on. No excuses, no illusions. Light up your lighter, bring them home. So we keep it on.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, October 6, 2009.
The planet strikes back. Mountaintop removal stalled again. Apple takes another bite out of the Chamber of Commerce. Plus, where there's a will, there's a denial.
All of that and more straight ahead. Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comment.
The cap and tax bill.
Cap and tax.
Cap and tax.
Cap and trade tax bill.
The tax and trade, cap and trade scheme.
By the way, that's cap and tax.
The crap and trade bill.
Oh, Republicans, is there no policy issue you can't turn into a fifth grade name-calling contest? I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, what do you got for us, Des?
Well, monsoon season in the Indian Ocean is off to a roaring start this year. The United Nations has sent out an appeal for aid to the Philippines, where two deadly storms in a week led to record flooding and over 300 deaths, with another typhoon heading their way. In India, officials estimate over 2 million people are homeless after torrential rains led to record flooding that submerged entire villages, described as the worst since 1903. Rescuers have given up finding survivors in the aftermath of the earthquake that struck Indonesia last week, and American troops are on the way to assist in recovery efforts after the earthquake generated a tsunami. Together, both killed more than 1,000 people, with another 1,000 listed as missing.
The planet has been raging over this past week or two. I don't know how much of it is connected to climate change. Maybe
well, scientists would say that they cannot and will not try to tie any individual specific weather event to climate change, but the intensity of these storms and the frequency and these record-breaking storms that we've been having are in line with the predictions of climate change. The Obama administration made a strong move to block the destructive mining practice known as mountaintop removal. The EPA has announced it is blocking 79 permits in central Appalachia because they would violate the Clean Water Act. Mountaintop removal is just that, blowing off the tops of the mountains to get at the coal inside, dumping the tons of waste debris into valleys and poisoning streams below because it's cheaper than hauling it away. The mining industry opposes the move, saying modifying their applications to meet Clean Water Act standards won't be economical.
We've discussed this before. This is the process of literally blowing off the top of the mountains, creating a moonscape. This has been now going on for years out there in Appalachia.
Decades.
And the folks out in West Virginia, there's some good environmentalists who have been fighting this over the last several years. Finally, they're beginning to get a bit of support, it seems, from the administration. That's good news if it holds. I guess we have to see.
The city of San Francisco is poised to become the first in the nation to recycle food scraps. In less than 3 weeks, all San Francisco residents, even in apartment buildings, will participate in a mandatory program to separate out not just their paper and plastic, but also food waste. The idea is to divert food waste from landfills and instead take it to a facility where it will be turned into rich compost and then sold to farmers, which in turn will reduce the farmers' need to use petroleum-based fertilizers to grow their crops.
Sounds like a fine idea to me. Way to go, San Francisco.
More major corporations are leaving the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over disagreement with the chamber's opposition to climate change legislation.
Good. The U.S. Chamber is a disaster. I'm just throwing that in before you even finish this story, these right-wing hacks who don't give a damn about the people. Go ahead.
Apple Computers has announced it is dropping its membership in the chamber effective immediately.
Yay.
Apple joined several major electric utility companies and Nike and GE and Duke Energy in publicly opposing the chamber's active campaign to shut down climate and clean energy legislation just introduced in the Senate. The chamber has said they don't dispute climate change is happening, just any legislation the Democrats present to deal with it. In fact, in public comment filings uncovered by media outlet Mother Jones, the chamber actually tries to assert that science is still uncertain and even makes the bizarre claim that humans will be fine even if the climate changes because we'll have increased air conditioning.
Oh, good Lord. It's worth remembering, by the way, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for those who are confused about it, is not a federal organization. It is a lobbying group, plain and simple. And at this point, I'd argue a very evil lobbying group.
The chamber is getting an assist from climate change denier George Will, columnist of the Washington Post. Now that the Senate has taken up climate and clean energy legislation, George Will strikes again with another scientifically illiterate column claiming that the world is now in a cooling period, a common misconception promoted by climate change deniers because of the rise in global temperatures that has leveled off recently. But he neglects to note that the last 10 years remain the hottest years on record. So George Will pulls out 10 years of data out of several hundred thousand years, which show the unmistakable warming trend, and it's sort of like looking at one day on the stock market and calling it a trend.
Does he not read his own newspaper that has long been reporting on the effects of climate change? Apparently not.
The dumbest thing about the column is that George Will calls environmentalists Cassandras after the character in Greek mythology who was always right when she sounded the alarm but was doomed to never be believed.
I think the Washington Post is now running the risk of never being believed at this point. If they don't start fact-checking their columns, their editorials, no wonder they're in such trouble. Dinosaurs. For more on that and all of our other stories today, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The truth is with science. The truth is with science.
Science is real.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
At 28 minutes before the hour, 28 minutes before the end of the program, it seemed rather silly to run the Hour 3 intro. I mean, you know what I mean. So, yeah, nice little bumper there instead. Welcome back to the tail end of the program. Thank you so much for all of your input, and thank you for your contributions to keeping this little enterprise going. As you know, we're facing a deadline, October the 21st. And I'm confident at this point, based on what I'm seeing, and thank you so much, that we will make it over the hump, but we are not there yet. We're going right back to the phones, but I want to share with you an email that rolled in the interim. Interim? Yes. Our buddy Tom, who is a longtime supporter of the program, said, I tried to call in today but kept getting pulled away from the phone, and I have to leave. Two things I wanted to bring up. One, what I did yesterday. Please read to the listeners. After your impassioned plea Friday, I went to my meager emergency stash and pried out three miniature engraved portraits of Ben Franklin. I went to the post office and gave them to the nice lady in exchange for a money order, which I then put in an envelope addressed to 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. It's right there on the website, headonradionetwork.com. That self-same mailing address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Dropped it in the mail on the way home. I want to challenge all, and that's in bold, by the way, all the listeners who haven't contributed yet to do this with as much as they can. I know everyone doesn't have as much, but everyone with a computer and internet service can surely come up with $5 or $10. Make it hurt a little, people. Come on. Do it today, not next week. We all get more from the horn than we put in. Please. And, by the way, the title of this email was Filling In for Kate. You do that very well, by the way. And then, secondly, I enjoyed the skit, but I have, talking about the Saturday Night Live Barack Obama bit. I enjoyed the skit, but I have another interpretation of these points and more. Yesterday I read online, administration pushing for full renewal of Patriot Act and FISA. U.S. climate bill, not likely this year, says Obama advisor. White House leaving Afghanistan, not an option. Military commissions, no habeas corpus, etc., etc., etc. That Newsmax column by John Perry keeps coming back to bother me. And in quotes, the president would be detailed for ceremonial speech-making. That whole column makes a lot more sense if you read it in the past tense. Your thoughts? And, of course, he says, regards to everyone, send money now. The president would, okay, let's try that in the past tense. In other words, let's try the John Perry line in regard with and do it with George Bush instead of that, you know, that one. The president was detailed for ceremonial speech making. And that's a brilliant observation, and Tom is absolutely correct, because that is exactly what the eight tormented, tortured, hellish years of George W. Bush were. George coming out to mangle the language, or bang his head against the transom of the Marine One, or grab the wrong door trying to get out of an audience hall somewhere in China, or caught on the microphone swearing like a two-bit frat boy, or assaulting the Chancellor of Germany by trying to give her a little neck rub there. She looked all stressed out, that Angela did. And that's all he was good for. He wasn't good for thinking. He didn't stay up late. You know, you got 4 to 8 years of the presidency. Use those four to stay up late once in a while. Don't put the footy pajamas on and be in bed by 9 o'clock, game boy. But Tom's right. The thing is that operating philosophy of that military coup is exactly what happened in those last 8 years. The geniuses of the military took over. Geniuses used advisedly.
and the policy wonks and that creepy dude Paul Wolfowitz who licked his comb before he... God, that thing from Fahrenheit 9/11 is just stuck in my... Ew! Licking his, sticking his comb in his mouth and then running it through that oily, greasy, filthy hair of his. Yuck! That's what they did. And then they detailed George for ceremonial speechmaking. Over at BartCop.com, the issue that's up and current right now, there's a picture, a photoshopped picture of the cover of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. Only it's got George Bush on the Atlas character with the globe on its shoulders. You've seen it. And it's been changed to Dumbass Shrugged. And there you go. What, we're going to invade another country? Shrug. It makes no matter of mind to me. We'll probably make some money out of it. F Saddam, we're going to take him out. Because all of those things are just a little bit off-putting when you read it in the context of the Obama administration. And like Gary, you know, I'm on board. I want him to succeed. I want him to want to succeed. I want to see things done in this country that this country desperately needs done. Listen to those headlines again. Administration pushing for full renewal of Patriot Act and FISA. U.S. climate bill not likely this year, says Obama advisor. White House, leaving Afghanistan, not an option. Military commissions, no habeas corpus. And here's another fun one just to throw out there for you before we go back to the phones. From the Society of Professional Journalists. You know, as opposed to the Society of Babbling Hillbillies, of which I am a one-man committee of without portfolio, you know that. This is an editorial penned by the president of the Society of Professional Journalists. It bears reading. And it is, it's creepy in the extreme. And by the way, thank you, Tom. Thank you for your words and your ongoing support. This was sent along earlier today, and I'm trying to remember who sent it along. Oh, it was our buddy Spike. Kevin Z. Smith is the president of the Society of Professional Journalists, and he says, on Thursday, the Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to vote, that would be this coming Thursday, on Thursday, the Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to vote on legislation that would grant federal protection to journalists and, more importantly, their anonymous sources. In this age of Enron, Balco, and Walter Reed Army Medical Center, it is critical that people who have information vital to the public get some protection to share their stories. Without this law, many may not come forward. When that happens, we all suffer. Up until last week, there was confidence the bill, S-448, also known as the Free Flow of Information Act, would finally jettison from the Senate Judiciary Committee with the blessing of Democrats and Republicans. Just about all that remained was the need to iron out details of national security interests and language to determine who would actually be covered under the bill. No small task, to be sure, but neither seemed insurmountable. Then the White House dropped its hammer. The administration, which previously backed the bill, had a sudden change of heart and reversed its support. On the campaign trail, then-candidate Barack Obama pledged to support the idea of more protection for journalists and their sources. He held on to that belief until last week when, after a meeting of high-level national security officials, oh dear, he did an about-face. His move has outraged a number of the bill's proponents, including high-ranking Democrats sponsoring S-448. Apparently, to the dismay of the administration, this bill currently contains language that would require concerns about national security matters to be taken before an impartial judge. Now, wait a minute. The bill, as it is currently constituted, requires that concerns about national security have to be taken before a judge. You know, one of those guys cloaked in that Article 3 constitutional authority, that kind of stuff. And the judge would then appropriately weigh the need to protect information versus the public's right to know. Not surprisingly, the Justice Department sees this as problematic because it wants to have the lone say in what constitutes national security. So Obama instructed his legal team to propose different language that ultimately renders S-448 useless. And without the administration's support, it is unlikely Democratic senators will support the bill, which means it will likely never see the light of day or a full Senate vote. In essence, this reversal may very well kill the bill Obama so heartedly supported a few months ago. If a bill with the administration's proposed language passes, it would clear the way for federal prosecutors to threaten reporters with jail time or fines for the sake of national security. You know, if I could figure out how to crank up that reverb on this mixing board. National security. Yeah, really ominous. If reporters refuse to give up the information, they would likely find themselves thrown into jail until they change their tune. Without a current law on the books, this has been a common tactic of the Justice Department. We remember it. Now this, if this was being promulgated by the Bush administration, the entire liberal blogosphere would be absolutely on flippin' fire. We would scream that they were a bunch of no good fascists, and we would be right. Because the Justice Department does not exist as an adjudicative body. The Justice Department exists as a partisan prosecutorial body. There are no judges in the Justice Department. But there's lots of prosecutors. And I don't know about you, but I don't want a partisan prosecutor making a decision about what constitutes national security in a matter of anonymous sources or a whistleblower case. But that's one more to add to the list. Not leaving Vietnam, I mean Afghanistan. No restoration of the Constitution and habeas corpus. That's scary stuff. And once again, if we are to have any integrity, we had better, by God, be willing to acknowledge that it's scary stuff when it comes from a Democratic administration, and it's scary stuff when it comes from a Republican administration, because frankly, fascism knows no politics save for its own self-perpetuation, and I don't care who's doing it, that has elements of fascism in it. When you take the adjudicative power away from the judiciary itself, you are neutering a full third of the constitutionally created form of government that we have in existence. And most of the federal judges out there, a lot of them, actually want to do their jobs. You know, we've got that little court of star chamber there that for FISA. What's next? Is the Justice Department going to want to replace that, too? Well, they were kind of rendered moot anyway by virtue of... Jesus, but there we go. So I wanted to make sure that I shared that with you. Oh, and by the way, before I do go to the phones, if you want to get really, really sick, ponder this as sent along by our buddy Chris in St. Louis. I know, it's not quite up there with FISA or a neutral judiciary or anything. But it's sickening. How about Rush Limbaugh as the owner of an NFL team? Hell, I wouldn't let Rush Limbaugh own a sub single A baseball club. I wouldn't let him own a minor league hockey club. I wouldn't let him own a minor league marbles team. But the St. Louis Rams may well become the Limbaugh Rams in the very near future. No, not earth-shattering like the earlier stuff, but sickening just the same, and yet another sign of the apocalypse, as far as I'm concerned. Brian's calling from New Hampshire. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you, Bob? I was going to just chime in real quickly about you had the caller Gary on there.
Yeah.
Speaking about the CIA and it, I agree with him about, you know, I've got somewhere in my books there about the book Honorable Men, My Life in the CIA by William Colby. And he's a... He could almost, William Colby, if you've seen interviews on him, Stanley Karno's documentary, Vietnam, a television history, that he almost seems like any high school, American high school's mathematics teacher or something like that, an unthreatening guy. But he helped run the Project Phoenix program in South Vietnam that killed at least somewhere from 30 to 50,000 innocent Vietnamese civilians. And, you know, Gary's right on about the CIA, and of course it's drug and crack cocaine trafficking in the inner city of America during the Iran-Contra time, and all of the North knew about that. God love him, a guy named Gary Webb, a real reporter, he committed suicide over that, I would
yes.
say, they were, over divulging it, covering the real ugly truth of it. But also, these private contractors, like Gary, you got to read Jeremy Scahill's book about Blackwater, and what they're doing right now, these private contractors, they're trafficking in women to a degree that, you know, they talk about this phony guy with this O'Keefe clown there, this young kid there, and the Acorn trying to besmear them with his phony. He's trying to look like a pimp. He looks like a high school clown or something. With all these phony chart. But the Blackwater and these private contractors in Iraq they've been trafficking in women for years, and they call them their slaves. Some woman, a human rights activist, was over there talking about this 400-pound slob who he has this slave of this 14-year-old Iraqi girl, and you know just a. The thought of that, that legalized child molestation, it's disgusting. It's so Blackwater, believe me, there's more private contractors in Afghanistan than there are alleged U.S. government troops, but they're not going away. They are, when you make war and war profiteering ever more profitable and
when you make it policy.
It's a growing disease on this American empire, much like if you look at the Ottoman Empire, they had the Turkish, the Janissaries were mostly slave soldiers at first, but then the slave soldiers basically started telling the Sultan what to do. Like this, we're talking about General McChrystal, I don't think he's as crazy as the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Curtis LeMay and those people under John F. Kennedy during the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I don't know, I don't know for sure. And what's led us to that, that this situation continues to be, you know, I think, folks, first I gave my first shekels to that I could afford to Uncle Bob Kincaid. But if you can afford The Loose Change, their latest documentary at microcinema.com, folks, it's worth it. But the fact is it goes back to September 11th, and the total lie, everything is such a ridiculous lie that's allowed these war profiteers to continue their evils all over the world. And one thing about September 11th, yet another huge falsehood about it, you know, Hani Hanjour, the supposed terrorist that flew Flight 77 into the Pentagon, and all the flight people that were tracking it all the way from at least 300 miles away for all the time coming in, Norman Mineta testified about the young officer who spoke to Dick Cheney that the orders still stand when it was 50 miles out, then all the way to 10 miles out, and Dick Cheney turns around and said, of course they still stand, and that kind of, and they're very suspicious. The 9/11 commission says he was not in that bunker until 9:58 a.m. or later, but Norman Mineta knows he was there at 9:20 a.m. telling that young officer those orders. But the Hani Hanjour, they allege that this guy, who could not even fly a single-engine Cessna in August 2001, Bob. They alleged he did this thing that experienced pilots and jet fighters all over the world, experienced pilots, they say it could not be done, but let alone by even an experienced, a very skillful military pilot could not do it. Yet this guy supposedly did that, crashing that alleged jumbo jet 757 into the Pentagon. But the one guy that could have done it was the actual pilot. We're getting into, you know, what should we do with the CIA? Well, I say I'm kind of agreeing with you and Gary. What you're talking, you could almost have the Defense Intelligence Agency take over everything, and the military intelligence, the Marine Corps intelligence is basically under ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, but that's under the DIA, and they take over all of that. But the fact is, they're also this Charles Burlingame. I don't trust. He was such a skilled pilot. He was from the you know, that famous Tom Cruise movie there about the fighter jocks there. He was a Vietnam
fighter. Yeah, Top Gun, sure.
Top Gun, he was a total Top Gun, and he was a military intelligence officer even in the time in his Air Force reserves, and up until he left, he worked in the Pentagon for years, and he worked in that same side of the Pentagon where he crashed they say Honey Hanjour crashed that plane into there, but I say the one guy that could have that, and he had so much terrorism training for years, and yet they overpowered just Charles Burlingame, this guy. I look at him, he looks like he's one Air Force guy that no terrorist is ever going to be able to take away unless they kill him first, the cockpit of the plane. You know, he's going to get the emergency, but he's going to push the right button and tell people that he's being hijacked way ahead of time. He's not going to give up the plane unless he wants to give it up. I believe it's possible. God love if anybody related to Charles Burlingame, I don't mean this, but I'm very suspicious that the supposed pilot of Flight 77, Charles Burlingame, was the only one capable of flying that plane like that on Flight 77 on September 11th. No one wants to bring that up, but that's the ugly truth. You know, that's the truth. Everything is such a lie, going back to at least that date, September 11th. But Blackwater, I believe, is growing as a, and all the other private contractors as a problem. I just got my senator here in New Hampshire. I helped her get elected. She's a very progressive Senator Jean Shaheen, New Hampshire, and we're trying to get Paul Hodes. He's a great congressman. He's very progressive. He's very hard on the corporations about this health care and the other thing. But to be our next Democratic senator there to take over from Judd Gregg there. But she just sent me back things about, you know, talking about thank you for contacting her office there about U.S. policy towards Pakistan. And then she says, early this year, I had the opportunity to visit both Pakistan and Afghanistan. Our servicemen and women and our diplomats are doing exceptional work in these critical nations, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, it's got no mention, of course, that the majority, I believe it's 60% of our forces there, are private contractors now. It's just then she talks about the Swat Valley in Pakistan with the extremists there. But we're not leaving there for a long time, and maybe the fact is that this empire, like the Ottoman Empire, like the Roman Empire, has grown so huge that our so-called commander-in-chief, formed a dual kingship like the Spartans used to have in ancient Greece with McChrystal, even they could not control the monster that our military-industrial complex has become, and the CIA is a huge part of that. You and Gary are exactly right, but the growing menace to me, if you read Mr. Scahill's book, is the private contractors. I just leave you. Do you have other callers on there, or
we've got a couple, but make your point by all means.
Okay, no, I just want one other thing that these people are talking about, it could grow into another Vietnam. It's already been that much has been spent by the Soviet Empire and our own in trying to conquer Afghanistan. Like I say, that even Alexander the Great could not do that. But the fact that I remember seeing a movie back in the 80s there about Vietnam, it must have been during the height of the war. It was set in that period. An American Army helicopter pilot is shot down. The rest of his crew is killed. You know, that could happen. He was lucky to be alive. He was wounded, but the NVA, North Vietnamese, or Viet Cong forces then overran his area. And until, the Americans, of course, with their air superiority, could get more people in there. But during that time, he tried to play dead, and this Viet Cong lad there, he walks away like he sort of believes him, and then he comes back, and the Viet Cong kid there, he takes the harmonica out of this Air Force, or this Army guy, the helicopter pilot, out of his uniform, and says, come on, play that for me. And he starts playing it. They start playing some kind of a tune together because he has a Vietnamese flute, does this Viet Cong soldier. And together they start playing, making music together. And the so-called enemies, they have a moment of peace. They have a moment of not war, but true human culture and interaction. But then the American jets start coming back over in helicopters. You can hear the heavy sound. You know, it's hard. Totally fits with Vietnam, and then the Viet Cong has to flee, and he gives him a, I think he gives his Vietnamese flute as a gift to the American airman. Then the American airman gives his harmonica to the Vietnamese kid, and he runs off in the woods, and that's the end of this short film there. But that's the only kind of victory you can ever have in any place, whether it's you're talking Taliban or North Vietnamese or anywhere, you know, unless like Gary spoke about, that if it's a Hitler, if it's a Nazi forces, and the guy is so crazy that even next to him, Joseph Stalin seems sane, like Adolf Hitler was, so evil, that otherwise there's almost every so-called enemy in the world we have right now that we can really make, like most of the people of Iran can truly be our friends. They love us so much about American culture. This is nuts what these people have got going with our country. And September 11th is the main part of the disease, Bob. I'll let you go.
All right, Brian, you sure do pack a lot into one phone call, and I do appreciate it.
Okay. Good night, and God bless you, sir. I'll try to make it even more at my next donation to it.
Well, bless your heart for being willing to be part of it. Thank you so much, Brian.
Take care. Good night, sir.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Holy cow, I have a headache from waiting.
Sorry, David.
I tried to call in about 9 times, and it was the busy signal over and over again.
We've been stacked.
Yeah.
And we're going to stay stacked, and we'll finish the program without getting to about 4 different calls. But you got about a minute to work with.
Yeah, I just wanted to say regarding the Blackwater thing, the reason why that we should be concerned about that is the fact that the CIA, the fact that the Obama administration co-signed refunding Blackwater, their contracts. That's the problem that I would address to Gary. And there's nothing we can do about the CIA, but there was something we could do with that, and we didn't. And that is the tell sign, and I leave you with this. We live in a Glengarry Ross age, people. A, B, C. Always
be closing. Exactly. Exactly. David, well said.
Later.
All right, take care. Bye now. David calling from Maine. You ever seen Glengarry Glen Ross? It's a great film, great play. But brutal as well. So that's the program for tonight. And to everybody on hold, I apologize. We'll try to get you in there as quick as we possibly can tomorrow. And thanks again to everybody for stepping up. You make me feel like it's a pretty darn solid likelihood that we will dodge this bullet, so to speak. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where the PayPal button is. You can also find the snail mail address there as well if you want to be part of making sure that this continues past October the 21st. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And a quick thing. You want to do something that doesn't cost anything and you can help out Coal River Mountain Watch, go to brighterplanet.com, brighterplanet.com, and look under the tab that says Project Fund and look for Sustainable Energy and Economic Diversification. It's the SEED project, and vote for it. There's a registration issue and stuff, but we are leading or near leading in that. Go and help out a little bit. Sustainable energy and economic diversification in the Coal River Valley. It could mean a $5,000 grant to Coal River Mountain Watch. And we'll get into that a little bit more tomorrow night. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, Tuesday night edition of The Horn is on the air. I'm Bob, and I've got some good news, or encouraging news, I should say. Let's start this thing out by noting that after last night, we are $750 toward keeping this whole this whole little experiment in the First Amendment running, which is absolutely magnificent, absolutely marvelous. So that means that's a very, very good sign that we will make it to the $1,100 we absolutely must have by October the 21st, and hopefully also to the regular goal, because I figured under the circumstances I've got to include the regular contributions. I've got to include that in what we have to do. So I want to thank everybody who stepped up. I want to thank Sue for her challenge last night, for other folks to step in and buy the prints, the gorgeous handmade prints made by our friend Diane. For love of West Virginia, I'm looking at mine right now, and soon many of you will be looking at yours. I thought you might like to hear a little bit of the commentary, and I've been asked twice in two separate emails by the folks who wrote. I've been asked not to give names out, so I will, of course, honor that. Let me see if I've got to pull them up again. It won't take but a second, I hope. Probably should have had them pulled up beforehand, but there's a lot of stuff that gets done along the way. One question was put by a person who wants their who ordered two prints. Two prints, and wanted to know, is it okay to order two? Yes, it is okay to order two. And he said he didn't want to hoard them, but no, if you want one for yourself and you want to give one away or something like that, it is more than okay to do so until they're gone. There are some left, not a whole bunch, but some. No, though, it was said, if you address this issue on air, please don't mention my name. Not that I'm trying to be anonymous, I just don't like to make a big deal about contributing, because I know there are so many who can't contribute, but contribute in so many other ways. What a beautiful sentiment. Indeed, and thank you. And then there's this. You can read this on air if you want, but please don't mention my name. I heard you mention on Friday's show that you guys were in some deep stuff in terms of making the bills. I want to let you know that you've got $200 on the way. I don't know how much of an impact my contribution will make. Here, let me help. Huge. Hopefully, since your announcement, more people will have contributed to this wonderful network, and that you guys will have been near your goal of paying off the bills. I've also kicked some dough to Ben Birch in hopes he can keep the archives and streams going. God knows, without him, where else am I going to go to get my daily podcast of kick-ass conversation radio to listen to on the way to work? And this is and this is just a beautiful thing that our anonymous letter writer says. You guys are one of the few radio networks that I attempt to tune into on a regular basis. With the likes of Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and all the other garbage polluting the airwaves, the horn is like a big breath of fresh air. I, for one, am glad you guys aren't on terrestrial radio. If you were, the FCC would probably censor you like crazy. God knows, you've been through it. And I remember you mentioning what kind of BS you've had to put up with while you were on terrestrial radio. Suffice to say, I'll be damned if the horn goes dark for good. I hope you guys make your fourth anniversary and that you guys can celebrate many more. Thanks, and give my thanks to the hard-working Horn family. I read that kind of stuff and chills go up my spine. Because that's exactly what's going on. That's why we do what we do. And with that in mind, look, let's just start this. There's a lot of news to do, but let's just remember why there has to be liberal, progressive-oriented news and conversation. And there is no better explanation for why there has to be such than to remind you what kind of filth, passes for professional broadcasting. And, of course, you know who the current poster child is for filth in broadcasting. Let's go to the radio, gang. Let's go to the professional terrestrial broadcast medium where trained professionals sit behind microphones and entertain and inform the American public via the airwaves that the American public owns.
Hang on just a second. Hang on. Let's all just weep with Nancy Pelosi for a second.
Okay.
It's kind of funny. Let it go. Just let it go.
Rhetoric.
Just let it go. It's all going to be fine.
Rhetoric. San Francisco mean.
I know.
Cougary.
It's all going to...